It's time for TWiT This Week in Tech, something to do while you're waiting for the brackets to come in. John C. Dvorak and I get into a fight over net neutrality. I think John wins. We'll talk about Apple's new research kit and what it means. Also, a look at the Apple Watch, the MacBook, a whole lot more. This Week in Tech is next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for This Week in Tech is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. It's time for TWiT's annual audience survey, and we want to hear from you. Please visit twit.tv/survey and let us know what you think. It only takes a few minutes, and your anonymous feedback will help us make TWiT even better. We thank you so much for your continued support. twit.tv/survey. This is TWiT, This Week in Tech, episode 501, recorded March 15th, 2015. Meet Candy. This Week in Tech is brought to you by lynda.com, the online learning platform with over 3,000 on-demand video courses to help you strengthen your business, technology, and creative skills. For a free 10-day trial, visit lynda.com/twit2. That's lynda.com/twit2. And by audible.com. Sign up for the Platinum Plan and get 2 free books. Go to audible.com/twit2. And don't forget to follow Audible on Twitter, user ID audible_com. And by shutterstock.com. With over 49 million high-quality stock photos, illustrations, vectors, and video clips, Shutterstock helps you take your creative projects to the next level. For 20% off image subscription packages on your new account, go to shutterstock.com and use the offer code TWIT315. And by ShipStation.com, the fast, easy way to manage and ship all your orders all in one place. Go to ShipStation.com for a 60-day trial. Before you do anything else, click on the microphone on the top of the homepage and type in TWiT. It's time for TWiT This Week in Tech, the show where we give you the latest tech news. And more importantly, you know the news. We're going to tell you what it means. Of course, we got John C. Dvorak here.
Hello.
Dvorak.com/blog.
NoAgendaShow.com.
NoAgendaShow.com. Go yeah. Kentucky. Undefeated.
Yes.
Undefeated. But a little later on.
We have no local teams that can win anything, so I have to go.
Now, did somebody from Kentucky send you this?
Yes. I'm hoping to get another one.
You know, Ryan Shroud, who's our host at This Week in Computer Hardware, is a big Kentucky fan. He's from that area.
How tall is he?
I don't know. He's huge. Also with us, Clayton Morris, all the way from New York. Are you in, Lake Tinkywig or are you?
No, I'm in New Jersey.
New Jersey.
I thought better. And like John, I thought about maybe wearing my University of Pittsburgh hoodie today, but since they're pretty terrible, I opted instead to.
That's why I don't wear University of California gear.
you see Clayton every weekend on Fox and Friends, and he's also kind of the resident geek. It's only a matter of time before you become like the tech guy. I mean, you are, aren't you, at Fox?
Yeah, I think I would like safe to say that I'm the guy that does the most tech at Fox News Channel. So. Yeah. Yeah, before I got there, no one was doing it. So,
well, that's a good thing.
Do they know anything about tech? Those people get anything? Any dirt?
There's a handsome.
Does Megyn
group of
Kelly
folks
know how to boot a machine?
You'd be surprised. You know, you got Neil Cavuto, who's very plugged in. He's got all kinds of tablets in front of him. He's a big fan. So he's a big fan of technology.
Shepard Smith
on his show.
Has that?
Oh yeah,
he's got those giant iPads.
The 50-foot iPads.
Yeah, they're exactly. Amazing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Either that or very small staffers.
They're all midgets.
They're shrunken down.
It's incredible.
I was giving a tour to my brother. My brother had never been to New York City. He came to town yesterday. He a Navy veteran, and he was in town. He was near at Fort Dix down there in New Jersey. And I gave him a tour of the studio yesterday, and we went into the studio. It's all quiet on the weekend. You get to see Shepard Smith's studio, and he's like, whoa, so huge in here.
No, it just looks huge.
Yeah.
On television. Also, Dwight Silverman from the Houston Chronicle. blog.cron.com/tech blog. Are you still doing the tech blog?
I am still doing the tech blog. I don't get to it as often as I would like, but I'm making more of an effort.
You better.
I'm still doing it. And Clayton, you will know that you have arrived as the tech guy at Fox when everybody starts coming to you when it's time to buy a new iPhone and says, should I get it? Should I get it? Should I wait to get the Samsung phone?
So you experience that walking. Or doing you know, helping out people set up their email accounts on their phones. You walk down the hall, and Dwight, I'm sure you get this. I'm sure you get this, Akron. When you walk down the hall, people are, you know, oh, I can't figure out. I've got one password for this account, and you end up doing technical assistance. Yes. Like most of the afternoon at work.
So hard. Yeah.
I figure that whenever I leave the Houston Chronicle, I can set up a consultancy and make just as much money by helping my former colleagues get their tech act together.
John, anybody ask you for tech advice at all?
I play the grouch.
You're not one, but you play one on TV.
I do.
Yeah.
And that keeps them away.
I got to ask you, because everybody says, why didn't you get Dvorak on after the FCC voted for net neutrality? FCC, I think, has now released... It turns out to be 400 pages of rules.
Yeah, unbelievable.
And they said John should be weighing in on this because he's not a fan.
Mm-mm.
Tell me about it.
This is to tell you. This is a government takeover.
No, that's
all
absurd.
Along. Here, I'm going to give you the history of the internet.
Absurd.
Oh, my God. Whatever happens, do not let the government take this thing over.
Wait, but you would rather have Comcast decide what happens to the internet?
Comcast is doing – what has Comcast done to you? Besides make you have two accounts.
John, we know what they've done to
you. Oh, it's a long list of what Comcast has done to me. I don't want to get started.
That's right.
Do you really think these big – wait a minute. Do you really think these big monopoly companies should be running the internet?
They're not running it. So let's go back. Years since the beginning of time. Oh, my God, whatever we do, let's not let the government get involved. And they turn around – boom, they give it to the government in the silver platter, and every other word in that 400-page document is legal this, legal that, legal this. As long as it's legal content and legal sites, let me ask you one question.
All right.
If all packets are equal and all bits are equal, what's legal got to do with it?
Nothing if people would adhere to that.
Would adhere to what?
But don't you think that there is a role?
I want to go to Pirate's Bay. It's my business. You want to bust me for it, find out that I did it? Have an FBI guy come
over. Oh, I see what you're saying. Your issue is with this clause, and I agree with you. This is a weird clause.
Not
that
a
says
clause.
All legal traffic should be allowed.
Yeah.
And then, of course, they
how
have to
define what's
legal.
How does that make all bits equal?
Well, that's a good question. That's a legitimate question. But I think that you're never going to have any government body say, okay, do anything you want, even illegal stuff.
Just saying. If all bits are equal, I don't see this being the answer to it.
All right. Do you think government regulation in terms of, I don't know, murder is appropriate?
It's not a regulation. It's a law.
All right. You think
regulation and laws are different.
All right. Antitrust. Oh, so you want a law?
No,
you
I don't want a law.
You'd be happy if there were a net neutrality law?
No, I don't need a net neutrality law. There's plenty of net neutrality. This whole argument is specious. It's bogus.
You think there's not a problem to be solved?
There's not. When the problem appears, then let's solve it. There's no problem right now.
Okay.
And how does all bits being equal and being... the same has to do with anything legal. Legal, legal. Now it's got legal sites.
Well,
I
think you're absolutely right. If we suddenly see, that's what people are worried about, a licensing for websites, things
by
like that.
By a regulatory agency
right.
doing their thing, which is regulating.
Right.
Yeah, you have this, you might have chaos. You might have, like, Twitter deciding to shut down Meerkat.
I think there ought to be a law against that.
You can say whatever you want, but Twitter, if it's their business.
Right.
Meerkat has no right.
This isn't about Twitter. This is about your internet service provider becoming a gatekeeper and telling you and telling what companies they can get to you. Of course we see
it. It's all theoretical.
You didn't see Comcast do that to Netflix?
Comcast doesn't have to put Netflix. Oh, okay. You want to bring that up? Netflix is going to be screwed by this, by the way, because if everything, all things being equal, and you can't do this, you can't do that, you can't give preferential for any reason for payment
So Netflix.
Netflix has got a server at the site right over here in sonic.net. If I'm Voodoo, I'm thinking that's favorable treatment. They have the Netflix server right there in the office. Let's get that out of there and get the Google thing out of there. Get the Google cache, the Google appliance. Get them out of there because that's unfair.
Leo,
if I'm Vimeo,
I'm
irked about this.
Week, the CEO of Netflix, looking at the rules and looking at what the FCC actually did, said, that's not what we meant. That's not what we wanted.
That's what you got.
And
we'll
so
see.
That's what they got, right. I mean, you know, you be careful what you ask for.
We'll see. I think the real issue is absolutely real, which is that Comcast said to Netflix, we're not going to buy an extra router so that you can get into our...
free.
Huh?
They're free.
What?
The routers that...
No, Comcast does not participate in the Netflix
right,
deal.
Right.
They don't do that. They refuse to do that.
Which is now they're going to be required by law.
Because what they want to do is charge Netflix. In fact, they do, and so does Time Warner, charge Netflix extra for access to their customers. Yeah. You think that's appropriate?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's their customers. They can do whatever they want. If you don't like Netflix, go across the street. Oh. AT&T is available.
Okay, there's two choices.
Well, that's not – there's more than two choices in some parts of the country.
Some parts. And 86% of the country.
I have three choices. I have Sonic. I got
– which AT&T. I would change away from Comcast in a minute, but I don't have a choice that's anywhere near the speed.
Well, he's going to start laying fiber, he says.
Who he?
Dane.
Oh, Jasper, yeah. He is laying fiber. In fact, he was doing it outside, but it doesn't not going to go to my house. Well, I wish it would.
Well, I'll talk to him about
if it. If I had a choice, then I wouldn't worry so much. The problem is most people don't.
Well, the choice is one thing, but getting carried away and going crazy, which is what this is all about.
We'll wait and see if it's going crazy. I think you're going crazy about perceived damages that haven't happened yet.
Here's why I don't really care at this point. I saw the hearings when the mobile industry people sat there, and they make it sound as though the mobile broadband guys are just out of control. They're actually regulated by Congress in a law that was written specifically for mobile broadband. And Congress runs that or keeps them in line. The woman that was the head of the association, she said that if they put us in Title II, we were going to sue the FCC until the end of time. And that's exactly what's going to happen. This whole thing's going to end up in court. We're not going
to see
any of these things for years.
Yeah. So nothing to worry about.
That's from my perspective, from your perspective. I don't know what you're thinking. You think Comcast is trying
to screw you over. Yeah. So is AT&T and Verizon and everybody else. These big ISPs want to control the internet. They want to tier it. They want to make it a toll road. They don't want it to be equal.
When that happens, I think you should take action. Right now, I'm not seeing
it. Well, we are taking action. It did happen. You just
action. Let's go give it
you
to the government.
Well, we'll see
after
what happens.
After decades
with
of bitching about the government.
You know, the government did create the internet in the beginning.
And gave it to private industry. And everybody said, oh, God, now we've got it to ourselves. Let's don't give it to the government.
All right.
And they gave it to the government. Okay. Good work. After all that complaining.
Now, I people wanted to hear from John. Now you've heard from John.
Okay.
Do you ever talk about this on any other show?
The No Agenda Show. Hey, by the way, this is delicious.
Isn't that good?
The problem
what
is,
what are you eating?
It's a candy bar. This is not a nutrition anything.
That's one of the great tenets of broadcasting. Always make sure you have a mouthful of a candy bar.
Yeah, there's nothing like it. Isn't it amazing? It just brings your point home to the makes people want to just watch.
I think the only time I remember that was Tom Brokaw during the September 11th attacks during the election. It was like 1 a.m. He's like, look, I haven't eaten. It was the Florida recount. He's like, it's like 1 a.m. I haven't eaten since 4 p.m.
Oh my
you
God.
Mind if I have some saltines? started eating on
that's
the
why, that's why you got that voice.
Now, Clayton, I got to ask you, have over your right shoulder, it looks like a baseball stadium. Is that your Phillies? That's actually, I'm sorry, over your, that way.
Yeah, and my Philadelphia Phillies.
That's your
over
Phillies.
There.
And then over your left shoulder, it looks like a rock concert. What is that?
Oh, I took that photo at a Monkees concert.
The Monkees.
Monkees reunion concert.
Wow.
And below that, if you pan down a little bit, you'll see a signed Super Bowl ball from Joe Montana.
No, right nice.
Gave that to me. Few Super Bowls
I think
ago,
you're too young to have actually been in a Super Bowl with Joe Montana pitched.
Yeah, have I?
Pitched?
I was a no-hitter, I think.
I was a long snapper.
As I remember.
Yeah. How are those Phillies going to do this year? I don't think so well.
I don't know. You know, spring training down there, they fired up the MLB app last week, so you can watch streaming MLB, a lot of the preseason games right now.
Isn't that awesome?
Yeah, it's great. It's
except
amazing.
All I'm getting on my MLB app is notifications that Will Ferrell is at bat.
Right.
What the hell was that? For a whole day, Will Ferrell dominated the nation's baseball game.
Great promotion.
It's always the Yankees that get in on those pranks, too. Remember a few years ago, Billy Crystal was like a Yankee for an afternoon?
So Will Ferrell, was that for a movie? It was for charity.
Yeah.
He played on every major league team, and he played every position.
No, he only played on enough to play every position. He wanted to...
Ten teams, 10 positions.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah.
Including
MLB,
DH.
Have you ever got a chance to tour their studios? John, I know you're a fan of getting the behind-the-scenes look when you're in New York City at some of these big studios. Have you ever gone down to MLB studios?
No, never have.
Their streaming operation?
Something I should do? Does it sound cool?
Absolutely.
Oh,
the guys
at
MLB are remarkable, and they keep it. I mean, it's public, but it's kind of hush-hush. A lot of these other companies use MLB streaming capabilities for their services.
Like HBO.
Exactly.
That was a bit of a shocker because HBO spent millions creating its own streaming operation out of Seattle. They hired a guy away from Amazon who hired many other engineers from Amazon. And then Game of Thrones came out last April and it collapsed. When they announced this new HBO Now, or maybe it was even before then, they said, and oh, by the way, we're not going to use our own outfit. We're going to use MLB.
And, yeah, they run fiber right to the stadiums. They've got an incredible operation. They can take feeds anywhere instantaneously. There's no delay. And, of course, out of New York is where they do a lot of the replays. So when they're doing the replays, they instantaneously they're being radioed back to an umpire who's in New York.
Right. They have the replay guy, the umpire, in the main studio and looking at all the different games.
Yeah, in this big control booth watching it. So it's crazy how MLB Studios. If you get a chance to tour it, I think it's in the same building as Google, if I'm not mistaken, in the Chelsea area. Oh, so okay. If you get a chance, go there and take a look
at it. Yeah, I will.
But do they have fiber right into Westeros? Because that's what they're going to need.
The behind the scenes of getting all of that material from, where do they shoot that, in Scotland?
All over.
Iceland? Yeah.
Yeah, all over.
And they have to bring fiber to those towns. I know Trey Ratcliffe, our mutual friend down there in New Zealand, and when, of course, The Hobbit was shooting down in New Zealand, they didn't have the capabilities of streaming. They didn't have the type of internet access they have, but Peter Jackson and bringing The Hobbit and Lord of the Rings down to New Zealand turned that country into, an incredible hotspot. So they were able to feed
this summer we were at Diocletian's Palace in Split, Croatia.
Oh, yeah. Croatia's great.
Great place. But they had a staircase to nowhere, and we would look, and the guide said, you can't go over there. That's where Game of Thrones is filming.
Wow.
And they had guards, and you said, don't, they said, no pictures.
Why?
Because that's a staircase in the Game of Thrones. I don't know. It's the same, it's the no spoiler police. I got my eye on you. All right, let's, since we're gotten,
did,
we got
into.
Did you
go to Dubrovnik while you were in town?
I missed Dubrovnik. We were on a cruise ship. We were only in one place at a time.
Oh, cruise ship.
Yeah. Which is worse, a cruise ship or government regulation?
Cruise ship.
Thank you. So, I don't know what to do now. I'm going to take a break, and we're going to come back and regroup and talk about Apple. That'll make you happy, right?
Oh, yeah. I love talking about Apple.
Have some more Nougo.
This is a good thing, but it's...
It's like a Rice Krispie treat covered with icing, but it's good for you.
Bull crap. This is going to be the worst thing for you.
You know, I got a check for 50 cents from Pop Chips. Because
a royalty check?
Because you plugged them on the show?
No, it was a class action lawsuit.
No.
Because Pop Chips, which is a snack food, claimed to be health, like some sort of healthful snack food.
You get a lot of money from
it. And somehow, I don't even remember, I didn't sign up for the class, but somehow I got in the class. Actually, it wasn't 50 cents. It was like three, classactionrebates.com. You went there and signed us up. All right. So Jeff Needles signed us up.
Yeah, give him a bonus.
We got three bags of Pop Chips or something like that. It was like,
you know, they can actually go to the live.twit.tv. They don't need to be watching this second rate.
Oh my god!
Stream
Meerkat.
I just set up my Meerkat for the first time. Oh. Right now, live.
Are you crazy streaming Meerkat too?
Yeah.
Stop it.
I had a whole conversation while John was talking about net neutrality. It was fantastic.
Yeah.
We did our own show.
Yeah.
It's a show
within a show.
I had Kim Kardashian on, and we were talking about her new makeup line. It's fantastic. We'll be right back, right after this.
Oh, Lord.
Still on? Okay.
Meerkat is... I spent how much to build this studio, and then now Meerkat... Anybody can do it anytime. Actually, the Meerkat story is kind of interesting, because Twitter, they're riding on the back of Twitter. All right, we're going to do the Meerkat story. Do you mind?
No, go to commercial first.
Go to commercial. Have some more Nougo. We'll talk about Meerkat in just a little bit.
Need something to wash down with the coffee. I'm going to go get another cup.
Go have another cup of coffee. It's kind of like it's like Mr. Toad's Wild Ride on this show, where it's just careening. And they give you a steering wheel, but then you're going like this, but it doesn't do anything.
It's not connected to anything.
It's not connected to anything. And then the fireplace, and you go right through it. Our show today brought to you by Lynda.com, Lynda.
Great operation.
I think so.
Yeah, you can learn all kinds of stuff.
I love Lynda.com. 3,000 on-demand video courses there for people who want to, I use it for, frankly, for my hobbies. as much as anything else. But people want to get job skills, get a better job, or just get a promotion at their existing job, whether it's mastering Excel or learning negotiation tactics or building a website. Or, but here you go, Pixel Playground, Burt Monroy. You're learning Photoshop skills from literally the best. I mean, he's the Leonardo da Vinci of Photoshop. Amazing stuff. If you're interested in programming, let's see. So for me, I'm not a programmer, but I like to. It's my hobby. I like to. So they have great courses for programmers, and not just hobbyists, for professionals. Java Essential Training, the Foundations of Programming Fundamentals. How about marketing? Growth hacking fundamentals. We hear a lot about growth hacking. Meerkat's obviously mastered that. Growth hacking fundamentals teaches you how to quickly expand your customer base using low cost and innovative marketing techniques. I mean, this is great stuff. And the beauty of this is you pay once for access to everything. You don't just buy an individual course. You get them all. You can stream them at your own pace. They break it up nicely, very short little chunks so that you can learn one thing at a time. And you know, it's like reading short stories. You just do a little chunk at a time. Courses are structured so that you can even jump into a course. They have text transcription, so you can search the transcript and go right to the chapter you're interested in. You want to learn more about memory management in Java, you just jump right to that chapter. Download tutorials and watch them on the go, including iOS access and Android. Are you meerkatting this? Oh, my God. I don't know. Does Meerkat allow lynda.com advertising? Create and save playlists of courses you want to watch. Customize your learning paths. Share with friends, colleagues, and team members. I love Lynda. And because Lynda works directly with the software companies, they will have courses the minute these updates come out. When the new Final Cut came out, immediately went to lynda.com to learn the ins and outs. I love it. It's fun. So try it. We're going to give you 10 days free. You get the run of the place. lynda.com/twit2. Twit and the number 2 at lynda.com, lynda.com/twit2 for your free 10-day trial. Thank you, Lynda, for your support this week in tech. So Meerkat is an interesting story because it was written by, I think, is it an Israeli company?
Yes, Israeli.
And I get the impression that they must have heard that Twitter was about to buy or had bought a company called Periscope. Periscope was a live streaming app. We've seen this kind of app before, right? Quick, for a long time, QWIK, social cam. Periscope was going to do something that would tie into Twitter. Twitter bought them, it's still in private beta, so nobody's seen it. And these guys at Meerkat said, wait a minute, within 2 weeks, they wrote this. It came out at the end of January. This is an app that you run on your iPhone. It's iOS only, and it allows you to stream. Now, how do I get to your stream, Jeff, so I can... So if I go to twitter.com, it uses Twitter to tweet it. So I'm going to what are you using, Dwight?
I'm just using if you go to
what's your Twitter handle?
@dsilverman, and you'll find the link. That's
so
the last
you'll see what happens. So as soon as you start meerkatting, a tweet goes out. Yeah. I don't want to sign up. A tweet goes out saying doing Twit Live now. That's the tag you put in there with a Meerkat hashtag and the Meerkat URL. Now people can respond to that, and well, actually, if they chat within Meerkat, it will go out as a tweet, right? So here, let me resize this, because one of the things that's weird about Meerkat, you're not supposed to hold it sideways, Dwight.
Oh, all right. Well, I'd switch if I do. Okay.
Yeah.
There we go.
Right. There's a web interface, well, but it's really limited.
And if you do this, because it's really designed to be for the aspect ratio of the phone, right?
Right.
Oh, I have to log into Twitter to see it?
Oh, please.
Oh, my horrible. God.
Well, think of it. It's really it's like the Instagram model of using app-based, you know, a fully app-based launch. I mean, yes, you have this janky web interface, which is highly limited. But I think, you know, Instagram really paved the path for saying we're going to launch on iOS. We're going to launch web app-based first with no real web, no website, no back-end on that end at all. And I just flipped my Meerkat around, so I'm in portrait mode now. So you're not supposed to be in landscape mode.
Okay, this is something a lot of Meerkat newbies do. And both of you, obviously, Meerkat newbies. Yeah, it's portrait, which is weird, but it actually works really well. you see, as people follow you, see their faces, little chat head bubbles of their faces.
And they can talk to you also.
And they can chat with you in the interface, but then it tweets, by the way. So we'll see people chatting with you.
Like you can hear their voice?
No. They're text chat.
You can't hear their voice, so you get the chat right on the screen. What's really cool about it is, though, that, I mean, well, that's why VCs, I'm sure, are salivating over this, is that it takes over your whole screen. So I've got 20 or so people watching mine right now, and that means that their whole iPhone screen is taken over by this. They're not doing something else. It's not ancillary.
But that's true with any app. Every app is single use on an iPhone.
Sure, absolutely. But, I mean, think about the potential for... you literally have their full attention. So you have their full attention on their phone right now. And they can't, they could be setting it down doing something else, but they're not multitasking on that same device like you can on a web interface. You're watching some web video, you're maybe typing out an email, you're missing an ad that's popping up. They have, full attention here on the screen if they want to be a part of this.
Can you show, unfortunately, I'm not logged into Twitter here, so I can't show.
Yeah, I'm like trying really hard to pull these up, and none of them are streaming anything that's moving for me. This is what I'm getting, right?
And then resize your window so it's portrait. So,
yeah.
Who's that?
This is Dwight's. This is Clayton, but it's not moving, and I'm pulling it up in a different browser.
They're trying to Skype with us and do a show. How about JS Needles, twitter.com/JS Needles. Try that. That's Jeff's Twitter. Anyway, this is because South by Southwest is this week. This is if you're going to launch an app, launch it at the end of January. And if you're lucky, you'll get this South by Southwest virality. Clearly, they have. In fact, Clayton, you were at the Apple event, and you said people were meerkatting the Apple event.
Whose nose is this?
Right, and you're there on in the line going in ahead of time, and a couple of my journalist friends were coming down the line and meerkatting right along. What are you doing? Like, you're live on a meerkat right now. It's like, oh, really? Okay, I didn't know. And then you suddenly have to wipe the sleep out of your eyes.
If they'd had meerkat in 2010 right when Apple announced the iPad, I would still be invited to Apple events.
Right, yeah. They'd probably put the clamp down on people snapping it onto their laptops and facing the stage because, after all, Apple had a live stream, so it's going to look much better than a meerkat.
And that's the interesting thing. We have a live stream. We happen to be streaming this live right now, but for some reason, all of these people... By the way, they're all dead. What's going on with your meerkats?
When you, Leo, violated the rules and shot the Apple thing, they were not streaming live back in the day.
No, that's why I did it, because there was no way to see what Apple was announcing.
Thank you. But it was actually a cool feature. Inside the demo room where we were trying the Apple Watch and the new MacBook.
Yeah, people could stream live.
People could stream live, and so you were able to get live interaction from people who were not in the room, who wanted answers from the event. Well, how does this work? Or what... When you try this, how does this work? What about USB-C? How is this different than this? All sorts of questions you're able to see when you're sort of in the haze of an event like that. You come out, like, there's a million questions I need to ask.
I think this meerkat thing is idiotic.
Yeah, of course you do. So here's the question. Obviously you do, John. Here's the question. Why is this taking off in this way when Quick was around for years? Social Cam from...
Just the name. People love the name Meerkat.
Hakuna Matata. It's a cute little Meerkat. It's that little drawing in the marketing.
Yeah.
It seems very friendly and very user-centric, and it's very simple.
It's a cute name.
Fact that they don't have archives makes it really, really simple. It's just on and off.
That's what Needles
believes.
Same
reason that Snapchat is.
Yeah, Needles believes it's the ephemeralness of these videos that you can save it to your camera, but there's no way to go back and look at a Meerkat.
Well, imagine, and imagine how difficult that would be, or how incredibly expensive that would be for Meerkat to be able to hold all of that video that people just doing random 2-hour streams on their phone. Your phone is forced to store that. But also, to Dwight's point, it's super simple. You sign in, and because iOS has Twitter natively in the operating system, you don't have to even type out a password. So that's a limiting, when you sign up, you get a new Roku box or something, you want to log in. I'm not going to log into Amazon Prime because I don't remember my password. You want to type it out on that little keyboard and the little remote. It's a pain in the butt. Because Twitter is system-wide inside of iOS, you just tap access to your Twitter accounts. Boom, you're right in. So within 30 seconds, you're up and running and you're able to start streaming almost instantly. It pushes it out and it takes over your whole phone. People saying, notifications still come through. Matt McHale on my Meerkat saying, you know, notifications will still pop up. So you'll still, you know, wife's texting you or something, you'll still get that. But it takes over the whole screen.
But the interesting thing, and I'm curious what you think about this, Clayton, since you're in the news business, a number of people have pointed out that this is going to, well, in fact, there was an article, I'm trying to find it on Medium, about a guy who was using Meerkat and streamed an hour of a fire rescue in San Francisco before the news crews got there. It suddenly makes everybody an electronic news gathering, an ENG crew.
You could be recording everywhere videos they go. In the olden days. Push the video record, and you record that news.
But there's something immediate about it. For instance, here's a prayer vigil in Ferguson.
It's like 100, 200 people at the most. And
So we're looking at this at cron.com as a way to do both live and then take the video off the phone, put it into – we use Videolicious to put together quick videos that are then put on our website. So we can send a reporter to something. He or she can record it live. It's saved to her phone. We then upload it into our system. And what was live, we have the archive for, and it becomes part of our content. This is real interesting to media companies.
Here, this is a Medium article from Neve Dror, the guy who – one of the founders who says – actually, Ben – Neve Dror is retweeting Ben, who says – Meerkat's not so much about ephemerality. It's about how to make you comfortable live streaming. So the fact that it isn't saved and repurposed or repurposable, it's also making a virtue out of a necessity. This little company didn't want to store and host all of these videos for people to watch.
Right.
Well, also, there's no the anonymity, too, to your point.
Well, you're not anonymous right. Because you're on Twitter. I mean, you're very public.
Exactly. So it removes the trolls. It removes the nasty, you know, it removes the nasty comments or so.
No, it doesn't.
Well, no, you get them, but they're ephemeral.
Right. Well, that's true.
Yeah, they're gone.
Now, Twitter is doing a competitive product, as I mentioned, Periscope. Twitter yesterday started blocking Meerkat's access to the social graph. So one of the things that was really good about Meerkat was the onboarding, as you mentioned, Clayton, process was very easy because on iOS you just say, yes, use my Twitter account. But more than that, you would also immediately follow all your Meerkatting followers on Twitter. So it was very easy to get people to watch you and to watch people that you knew Meerkatting. Twitter has cut that tie as they can, because they control the social graph. And I imagine the other anti-competitive motions from Twitter soon, because they want to do their own thing.
They're crazy. They should let this go. What difference does it make to them? Is it going to really cost them money?
Well, I think it actually could have a backlash. I think the Meerkat community could get pissed off at Twitter. And when Periscope comes out, intentionally not use it. Periscope does some different things. One of the things you've played with it, Clayton, so I would love to hear your opinion. But one of the things I know it does differently is it does save and will reserve your video at any time. It is not ephemeral. And when it replays the video, it replays the comments. Also, another difference is on Meerkat, when you comment on somebody's stream, it becomes a tweet from you with your comment. In other words, and as an at reply, when I use Meerkat, I suddenly see all these people in my Twitter stream. Periscope won't do that. It will allow people to comment, but they won't.
So it clogs up your Twitter screen.
It does. It tends to clog up your Twitter screen.
So, yeah, the lack of ephemerality is one of the big differences between Periscope.
Tell me what it was like. You used it. Was the interface similar?
Briefly, it's similar, but I saw a beta of it. And I didn't get to play much with it. So right now it is in beta. You have to request if you go to Periscope app. I think it's Periscope. I forget what it is.
Yeah, I requested because I would love to try it.
Did they give you a timeline on that?
No.
I saw hands-on with someone who was kind of on the down low about it.
It's Periscope. Periscope. What is it? No, this is.
I think it's Periscope app.co.
It doesn't say when you sign up.
Doesn't say anything. Yeah.
No, it doesn't say about anything. Talk to timeline.
Yeah.
So they're kind of keeping it hidden right now, but you know, it'll be interesting to see if now are people so ingrained with Meerkat that they're not willing to jump over to Periscope? I don't know.
Yeah, there's no friction.
How many users are there in Meerkat? Do we have a number?
The last number I saw was about 135,000, and then they had added more as a in fact, they jumped in numbers as a result of Twitter's cutting them. So there was kind of I mean, it made news, so it got them more attention, and now they have even more users. So
well, it's been huge at South by. I mean,
right?
You could attend South by. It kind of It's interesting, and I probably have a little more skin in this game only because we're live streamers. And when we were at South by Southwest, live streaming South by Southwest 4 years ago, it was us. And I did a, you know, the live crowd surf and all of that.
Well, you bailed out just in time.
Wow. Now anybody could live stream from anywhere, including a crowd surf. There we go. There are some of them.
Yeah, they were down. Meerkat actually said on their Twitter feed that they were down for maintenance for 15 minutes or so.
So now we're seeing Clayton.
He's now back. But see, this
Clayton,
is the kind
you're
of
holding
the weirdness
it sideways.
You get.
Hold it portrait
mode. It stretches out in strange ways.
No, I've got it set up portrait mode.
It's yeah. distorting you.
Yeah, I don't understand.
No, it's just really wide. I put on a lot of Christmas weight.
And I've turned mine off, so
yeah, all right. It's a very boy. This is entertainment at its best, especially the Clayton feed. Fantastic, Clayton. This is great stuff.
There's also a lot of latency, about a half minute latency, something like that. And apparently, Periscope will not be so latent. Although, when you release it,
cheap.
Might suddenly get latent. I don't know. I think it's an interesting story. It's just another. It strikes me as being just another one of those flash in the pan viral moments.
Let's hope.
But maybe not. Maybe there's some value to it. I'm about to ban
what do you think the value might be? Now, I can see that, you know, maybe you're doing something that you, know, you want your friends to watch in real time. But
I'm banning the damn thing. High schools all over the nation banning Meerkat.
You know, it's interesting. Alex Lindsay brought up something interesting this week, and I've heard this among video producers as well from the TV side, which is impromptu broadcasts, you know, the very limited viewership without it being scheduled at a scheduled time where most
you
people
can
know.
Schedule Meerkats, although that's an interesting. Yeah. I don't know if,
So the sort of impromptu streaming video doesn't really. You know, it doesn't really work.
Well, it's not going to threaten Fox. It's not millions of viewers. I had my largest Meerkat stream was 999 people, but I think that's because I broke it. So
what would have happened in Ferguson if Meerkat had been around?
Yeah, well,
that's the question.
Now right. That's an interesting
question. There'd probably be too much to choose from this or
another. I think for news, it's really interesting.
Yeah, absolutely.
So are you getting it on the Houston Chronicle Meerkat? You getting stuff there? Or?
Well, I've still been playing with it just on my account, but what I want to do with it is get people trying it in the newsroom and then taking that video and uploading it and using it. The issue with vertical versus horizontal is a problem because the app we use wants it to be horizontal. So I haven't seen yet how that will play out, but
that's an interesting choice too. The idea that it should be portrait mode. So
I will say, though, I think here's exactly how it would work. First of all, you'd never be able to toss to a reporter using this
so much
with
latency.
A 30 seconds delay. You would actually have less of a delay if you tossed to the International Space Station for a live talkback. So there'd be no way you could use this for a reporter hit, but it would be a great ancillary use case to set it, you know, side by side a reporter and actually have a live feed of what they're seeing on the ground. Maybe a second camera that producers in a booth back in New York or LA or whatever could tap into and pull live video from.
But you're thinking traditional television.
Yeah, I think it's citizen journalism, right?
If you're producing for the web, and you're doing citizen journalism, and you're assembling components for something that people use as destination news, that's a different thing than the traditional television model.
Right. Yeah, an unfiltered feed. Certainly we were pulling feeds live off of people's phones during the Arab Spring, from the square in Iran and all over in Egypt and other places where we couldn't get traditional cameras in there. So people's phones and Twitter was an incredible source of news.
It's going to be the great source of some fantastic hoaxes. Bad fees, general public fooling, some guy, kids.
Baba booey to you all.
Pretty much the same thing.
Later tonight, I'm gonna set up a Meerkat and pretend that I see Bigfoot in my backyard, and I'm gonna see how many people log in to watch my Meerkat.
Lots. Lots.
You don't need to pretend.
That's right. I'm in New Jersey. Jersey Devils.
Does this reach the consciousness of normal people, or is it just something that's bubbling around among the techno elite?
Oh, it's a South by Southwest thing.
It's very doesn't know anything. They don't even know who Putin is.
Where is Putin?
Supposed to show up tonight.
Tonight's the night.
At some meeting.
Yep. His next public appearance is supposed to be Monday in Russia, which would be tonight.
Yeah.
He went to Switzerland to have his baby, right?
Apparently, his mistress is having a baby. They think maybe he went there. Could be just under the weather.
Or he's drunk.
Could be drunk. Yeltsin would disappear for long periods of time because he was drunk.
Yeah, he wouldn't sober up.
If I were the leader of a great nation like Russia, I'd get drunk a few times a day.
That would never happen these days in the United States. You imagine, it was a Grover Cleveland who had that secret surgery at sea in the late 1800s, and no one knew where he was.
Really?
There's a great book on it. By the way, if you got an Audible ad in the show tonight, I don't know.
We do. We do. You want to do an Audible ad? All right.
It's a fantastic audiobook, by the way. Candace Millard, I believe, is her name. I could have it wrong, or I could have two of my authors. It's great narrative nonfiction. I think it's called The President is Sick. And for like a number of days, no one knew where the president was. And they put him on a barge, and they brought a surgeon in, I think, to remove an abscess or cancer from his mouth. I think because he was a heavy cigar smoker. And no one knew where he was. One intrepid reporter just didn't buy the story and ended up digging into it and was vilified by the administration. They called him a liar. I think it was in Life magazine. And it wasn't until years later that finally I think the surgeon came forward and said, yeah, in fact, it did happen. And this reporter was many, many years later exonerated as a result of it. But that would never happen these days. Where's the president missing for 4 days?
Well,
Hillary went missing for a while.
I mean, the whole press corps knows where the president's movements are on a daily basis. Travels with him to.
I wonder if that has to do. That has to do with the transparency.
Ha. That's good.
You're so predictable, John. I love it.
Sure.
So, you know what, John? It's finally happened. Mike, did you reassign my keys?
I did nothing. You just blame me for everything. I show up. Next thing, I'm blamed for the camera not working correctly, which is somehow fixed.
I can't type now Grover Cleveland. I keep getting Grover.
You got something wrong.
Grover. All right, there we go. Grover Cleveland.
Try that. It's not plugged in.
Let's see. An Honest President, The Life and Presidencies of Grover Cleveland, A Secret Life, The Lies and Scandals of Grover Cleveland, The Forgotten Conservative. This guy, there was a lot going on.
The President is a Sick Man is the title.
Yeah,
it's not on Audible, is it? No, it doesn't look like it is.
Oh,
it looks Kindle. If you read it on your Kindle, then that's where it is.
Oh, man.
No, I might have done the WhisperSync audio version. Why don't they have it on Audible? They have everything else on Audible.
You know what they have on Audible right now, which I am dying to read, is the story of the Lusitania. I love this historic stuff. Eric Larson, who I'm a fan of. I read The Devil in the White City, which is his story of a serial killer during the Great Chicago Exposition, and it's a wonderful
piece. That's a great book.
Isn't that
great?
That's
a wonderful book.
So it turns out that in the Lusitania situation, remember Lusitania was sunk in 1915, and it was part of what got America into World War II.
Yeah.
Turns out Churchill knew it was going to be sunk. This was kind of like the Enigma thing, but they didn't want to. They couldn't do anything about it because it would reveal the fact that they had broken the German codes. But they knew a U-boat was headed for the Lusitania. Sounds fascinating. Dead Wake: The Last Crossing of the Lusitania. That's the kind of book, and we love Eric Larson.
Yeah, he's great. He also wrote In the Garden of Beasts.
I haven't read that one yet. Is it good?
It's great. Yeah, The Ambassador to Berlin. Right as that World War II was unfolding, American ambassador to Berlin. He's a great writer.
Screwing everybody.
Right. She was like
the whore of Berlin, apparently.
The town tramp.
William E. Dodd, America's first ambassador to Hitler's Germany, a mild-mannered professor from Chicago. He brought his wife, son, and flamboyant daughter.
Yes. Right. That's a nice way of saying it.
Wow.
She was screwing the head of the Gestapo.
She was enamored of the new Germany. They say,
well,
wow,
she was getting.
Now I have to read this one too.
It's a good book.
Now here's the deal: we're going to get you two Audible books for free. Somehow we segued into a commercial for Audible here, thanks to you, Clayton. I appreciate it.
Broadcast professional.
You are a true broadcast professional. Audible is a great resource. Obviously, we're all Audible fans. That listening to Audible books brings these books to life as you're driving to work, as you're walking on the treadmill, as you're washing the dishes, or doing the housework, or walking the dog. I listen to Audible all the time. And if I were you, I would suggest you try it out. Now, you're not going to have to pay anything. For two books, you go to audible.com/twit and the number two. You'll be signing up for the Platinum account. That's two books a month, but your first month's free. Cancel anytime in that first 30 days. You'll pay nothing, but you get to keep the books. You'll also get the Daily Digest of the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal. An Audible subscription is a transformational experience. I just cannot recommend it more highly. They have, I think that's where I listened to the Economic Hitman book that you love so much.
It's a good book.
Let me see if it's...
And it's actually quite good in the oral...
The Audible version?
Yeah.
John Perkins, Confessions of an Economic Hitman. This is actually the first thing you ever told me that made sense. I really liked this book.
Well, good. You're on your way. One of these days, it's you'll the come beginning. Around.
You know who else has a great voice for reading is David McCullough,
oh.
the author of John Adams. Well, his new book is out.
Yes, I saw that.
It's called it's on the Wright brothers.
I'm actually astonished that he has the time to do these books.
And reads them out loud, you mean?
Yeah, that's a long day, to say the least. You won't even do it.
Actually, this says it's not out till May.
Oh, May 15th.
And the narrator to be announced.
Oh, but he does all of them.
I think, you know what?
Why don't you do it, Leo?
He's done it. But they don't want to say it yet.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah. He's wonderful. Yeah, if you like history, if you like
negotiating
science.
The fee.
Yeah, right.
He science does a mix-up. Like, if you get some of the CDs, some of them on Audible aren't done by him, then some of them aren't.
This was a weird one. John Adams, he did the abridged version of.
Oh, right.
And then the Nelson Runger, who's very good, did the unabridged version of John Adams. And I liked the abridged version so much and McCullough's narration so much that I actually went out and got the full version. And then I bought the hardcover. This was an amazing book because we knew so little about, well, we didn't know so little, but history did not tell us a lot about John Adams. When you start to hear his story, it's quite an amazing story. It was the inspiration for the HBO series. Anyway, look, this is why we love Audible. For science fiction, nonfiction, like history, business books, for the latest bestsellers, there's nowhere better. Audible, 150,000 titles strong. Audible.com/twit2. Get your two free books today. All right, Clayton Morris was at the Apple event. You were our proxy. We watched with interest. Apple actually had more to announce than a watch.
Yeah, surprisingly, it felt like a couple events shoved into one event this time, and I think caught all of us off guard. It shows the secretive nature of Apple, that when it comes to hardware, there are leaks that come out of China. We kind of know what's coming. We saw Mark Gurman at 9 to 5 Mac with a full artist rendering of what the new MacBook would look like, almost spot on.
It was right on, wasn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, save a few minor little details.
But that was last summer that he came out with that.
Yeah, not too long ago. Right. And then, but we didn't have any idea. When Apple does software, very often, except it's HealthKit, once again, that was a leak, but very often we don't know. So ResearchKit, I think, caught a lot of people off guard. I spent some time this morning talking with one of the leading urologists in the country. This is the kind of guy who...
Are you okay?
Heads of state.
I think it hurts when he pees.
He's one of our contributors, and he's like the head of robotics also at Lenox Hill in New York. So he knows his stuff. This is the kind of guy that where you know he'll have heads of state fly into New York to be examined by him. He's that good, and
he has seen penises than any man in New York.
Right.
More famous.
We're talking
penises.
About the research famous, projects, maybe. Though. I think this was a really surprising move from Apple. This research kit, and you know, interestingly, going open source. Also, but it's exciting from a medical standpoint to be able to get that many people involved in research projects. Like the doctor was saying to me this morning, he said it's impossible. It takes forever to get any kind of a sampling. You get people in a dorm room who just want to earn a little extra money, so they're given hemoglobin, you know, so they can make a few extra bucks, and they rip off the little pages on the thing in a dorm room. I had a friend in college that did that. I think that's how he actually got food. He was given blood so often. So that was exciting. That was a surprise.
Before you go on, I want to just kind of a little bit more on ResearchKit because we haven't talked much about that. That really was took a backseat to the glitzier announcements. Apple was very clear to say you're sharing your data, but privately. I'm talking to our resident physician here, Dr. Mom. She made the point that this is a first step to getting Apple. Diagnostics approved by the FDA. For instance, you know, they talked about you can use this application if you have Parkinson's to diagnose. You talk into it, or you tap back and forth, and then it would do some diagnostics. But, of course, those diagnostics are not FDA approved. So the first step to doing that is to create this research kit and to get as many of these of these data points as possible. It's, in effect, you're participating in the trials for a product that at some point could be used and insurers would pay in lieu of, for instance, a visit from a home nurse. So right now they have no diagnostic value. This is part of a larger process, and I think very important to Apple, because I think one of the things that happened with the Apple Watch is they wanted to do things like that. They want the iPhone to do things like that. And the FDA said, well, first you got to prove it works.
Right. There are certain things that get FDA approval. I moderated a panel at CES, I think last year maybe, it was fun because we had a range of – we had, first of all, physicians who worked directly and had to seek FDA approval for all sorts of heart heart rate monitors, and then also consumer-based tech operators who were there, who were focused on the broader consumer aspect of health, sort of the Fitbits of the world, and not being able to get FDA approval for the sort of broader consumer data. We know that Nike, for instance, Nike had all of that data. Wired did a great piece on it a few years ago, how Nike was sitting on all of this data about people, but they didn't know what to do with it. They didn't know what to do with all of this, all of the data from people jogging all around the world. They could look at it and it was fun, but they couldn't really do anything with it.
24andMe got in trouble, even though they completely anonymized all their genetic information for use in Parkinson's research. And people said, wait a minute, what are you doing?
So what's weird is you can use, for instance, as an example, like the Dexcom. It's an FDA-approved device that it's a glucose monitor, right. And it goes into its own dock. On its own, it got FDA approval. It is able, though, to share the information from that dock through your phone to the cloud. So presumably it could be using Wi-Fi also. So you can use the iPhone to share it, but the iPhone itself doesn't have any kind of FDA approval. So this glucose monitor separately, and it takes years to get this approval. So by the time it finally hits the market, you've already got updates, you've already got ways to improve it, and it's already behind the times. And the way in which we can develop software so quickly on the iPhone, we can make changes very quickly. And we can get updates out there to the public very quickly. And we don't have to wait for this long, long, long path of FDA approval. So we're in a tipping point.
But you still can't use it to diagnose until you get FDA approval.
Correct.
And that's – I think people might say, oh, this is great. This will be useful for me to diagnose something. It won't be. What you're doing is participating in a research study that is going to be used to validate the data so that down the road, perhaps – you'll get a diagnostic tool but it has to be approved by the FDA.
And so, beyond just the data that you're providing, if you have type 2 diabetes, for instance, in the diabetes app that I think was developed by the Massachusetts General Hospital off the top of my head, if I'm remembering, there's five apps that they featured. And for instance, that will give you data about the last time you've taken your medicine, monitoring of different things. So beyond just the data that you're providing, you're also getting great feedback, reminding you to take certain medications at certain times. So it was
I guess it's legal to do that. So it says Glucose Success, that's the app you're talking about, helps you keep track of health behaviors, important for people with type 2 diabetes. Data you share through the app as part of the research study will create an unprecedented crowdsourced database of health behaviors and glucose values. But at no point are you going to get any recommendations from this yet. But I hope that we will have... And I think that's what happened with the Apple Watch, is I think that they wanted to do a lot of stuff, and they found out that they couldn't without FDA approval. This is their intermediate step. Meanwhile, the Apple Watch can draw pretty pictures and send it to your buddies.
Leo, one of the questions that I had about, and I haven't seen this answered, maybe it's been in some other stories, but one of the issues with when you have voluntary samples is that it's kind of sample chaos, where if you have all these people coming in, yeah, they get a huge amount of data, but there's no control or way to make sure that any of the data anybody is supplying is really accurate. Right. There's not all of it is sensor based, and there's no oversight for the data. How much can people who are doing these studies rely on the data that comes from these apps?
Right. Actually, Dr. Mom is correcting me. She said you can use information for personal diagnosis, but a healthcare provider can't until FDA has approved it. But that means an app. But Dr. Mom, doesn't that mean the app can't tell you, Can't make a recommendation without approval. I don't think the app can do anything. You could, I guess, draw your own conclusions. but the app
rural
can't.
Areas, you know, I lived in one time when I was an anchor in southern West Virginia, in Bluefield, West Virginia, that the complaint was there was no heart center nearby. Right. I mean, within like an hour. So being able to get this data to a doctor that could look via the app, whether they're monitoring it live and they're able to see, I don't know, fluctuations in blood pressure or otherwise, and they're able to make using a camera. You know, I often thought Google Glass was a joke. I thought one of the areas it could have been very useful was being able to have a doctor's eyes looking via a camera and being able to have that connection.
That's what we have Meerkat for.
Right.
Dr. Meerkat to you.
Meerkat is saving lives.
John, are you worried about the insurance industry getting a hold of this?
Oh, I'm so predictable.
What a softball. That's a softball question.
Of course.
Of course.
This is the problem. All they want to do is find all kinds of ways to charge you more money for your insurance, and this is one of the methodologies they'll use.
Are you going to get an Apple Watch? You look like a natural for the $17,000 Apple edition.
Yeah, I do. Yeah. I look just like a guy who'd be wearing this piece of crap.
Did you like Kevin Rose's TechCrunch article?
I know that you were upset by this because you're going to get the gold watch.
No,
and now
I'm not.
Rose has said, which I think is very interesting.
It's a douchebag detector.
He has created a meme that anyone with a gold Apple Watch, which he says is only worth $1,800 in gold, which is not a lot. He says that anyone who buys an Apple gold watch is a douchebag.
Yeah.
And then he showed a bunch of tweets from various women all claiming that they would see anyone wearing this as a douchebag.
Anna Kendrick says we should be – she's, of course, the perky and lovable – I don't know. She's from Pitch Perfect, right? And she was in Into the Woods, played Cinderella. We should be thanking Apple for launching the $10,000, quote, Apple Watch as the new – gold standard in douchebag detection.
Yeah.
Leo, I think that Kevin is right because my father is a jeweler.
Yeah.
He spent years working for Zales. I grew up around watches and even sold watches as a teenager and a college student in his stores. And Kevin is right that traditionally expensive watches have a cachet because of the length of time you would keep them and pass them on. And for collectors, solid gold watches have value for the gold.
Right.
Apple, because it's a technology piece and not really a timepiece, has done away with both of those aspects to it. And nobody's going to take this and say, son, I'm handing you down my Apple Watch.
Well, thanks, Dad. You got a Casio watch to give me, too?
Yeah, something that works, right. Something that's new. Right. Well, I think a borderline collectible watch, which is I have one of the original Fairchild.
That's collectible.
Watch that you had to push the
button. 4004 in it?
It had some little chip. Yeah.
Pulsar? Is that a Pulsar?
It's Fairchild, he says.
Yeah, it's Fairchild. Fairchild, and you push the button, and then they had an LED.
Would light up for half a second because otherwise it'd kill
the battery. Yeah, it was red.
Yeah.
And you would see the time, and it became like a thing in the 70s where people would
70s, right.
Push the button because you'd show, look, I've got this watch on. Watch me push the button. And so it was a prestige item for a very short time.
Watches have been douchebag detectors for decades, it turns out.
Well, that might be the case.
Kevin quotes Patek Philippe's ad campaign.
I got it for $5 at a garage sale.
Did you?
Yep.
Well, let's see. It's worth something.
Yeah.
You never actually own a Patek Philippe. You're merely looking after it for the next generation.
That's a good pitch.
There's no hand-me-down value. But and actually, I was really surprised because even in, at least in technology, if you bought a $350 computer or a $17,000 computer, you would at least get more RAM or a faster processor. But weirdly enough, you're getting exactly the same Apple Watch. Exactly. There's no more memory. There's no special processor. They didn't do anything. You're just getting some gold. And here's another fun thing on pricing. The $10,000 Apple Watch comes with a fluoroelastic band, a rubber band. If you want the leather band, same watch, $17,000. So the band.
$2,000 band of leather?
$7,000 band.
Oh, it's $7,000.
It has gold clasp on it.
It has about $500 of gold.
Right.
I think the gold edition watch has been a distraction.
I agree. It's not the point.
Right. You know, to Dwight's point, though, that they don't think of this or that it's not being presented as a timepiece. You go right to Apple.com. It's one of the first things. It sits
above. Bizarre.
above the other ways to stay in touch. They say it's an incredibly precise timepiece. You go through all the ways that it's keeps time within 50 milliseconds.
All digital watches are incredibly precise timepiece.
It keeps time within 50 milliseconds
does the same thing.
Of the definitive global time standard.
That's
I
ridiculous.
Think the more important
By the
point
way, where is it getting that time from? Your iPhone. So apparently your iPhone knows what time it is too.
Yeah, so what do you need this thing?
Well, that's the question, right? And I think this is a unique moment for Apple, and whether or not, and I'm just spitballing here, but I think next to the iPad, Apple is facing its most unique messaging challenge in years, right? Convince me that I need this device above what I already enjoy about the iPhone, or just simply don't mention the iPhone at all. And it's interesting, if you read Apple.com, you'll notice that if you look on this page, the watch page here, yeah, it only mentions the iPhone once. And it only mentions it as an aside, which is during the timepiece section where it says that it's in conjunction with your iPhone, right, comma, it keeps time with. Now, if you go to the iPad page, the why buy an iPad page, it mentions the iPhone repeatedly. And it mentions them working in handoff.
Which is funny because you don't need an iPhone to use an iPad.
Right.
But so you do Apple, need it for an Apple Watch.
Right. But for how long? That's the question, right? Apple's at a unique moment here. We have to imagine that it won't – I happen to think that it won't be for very long that you'll need an iPhone paired with this device. And so does Apple see this as the future of communication beyond the phone? And could we see a time where the iPhone becomes like the iPod, denigrated to the dustbins, and now people are using this device? Apple presents it right on their page.
Yeah.
That we think that this is the most intimate way to communicate, and it's better than any other communications device because you're wearing it. So, you know, if you can read between the lines, or you can read exactly what Apple's saying about it right on their page, that they think that this is the most impersonal product they've ever made, and it's that way because you're wearing it on your body.
But it is a logical successor. I mean, the computers started in a big room, and then they got refrigerator-sized, and then desktop-sized, then laptop-sized, then pocket-sized. I mean, there is a point at which you don't want to get any smaller, but the watch is the next logical progression.
Yeah.
Well, but then we're seeing this progression with larger screens on the phones, right?
But there does become a point, yeah, where the screen gets too small to use.
Right. So there are certain things I spent
at that point.
But I spent about 30 minutes playing with it pretty heavily this week, and I try and dive through the software as much as you can do in 30 minutes, and, you know, playing with text messages. And I have to say that the reason that I would buy it is because it does the things that I do on my phone faster. So it gets me back. You know, there's been this resentment sort of bubbling for a while about the sort of hostility around technology as a scapegoat for social detachment, people with their heads down at dinner, you know, not paying attention. So the things that the watch does best are the areas where it's pushing that information right to your wrist, the text message from your wife, hey, I'm on my way home, here's a quick message back, the turn-by-turn directions, tap left to make a left to tap right if you're walking through the city. I don't have to be fumbling around in my pocket. An Uber ride is 2 minutes away. You just glance down. Oh, he's 2 minutes away. We can continue talking here outside of this bar or nightclub. You know, those little things where I'm not spending 10 minutes then in time suck mode by opening my phone, responding to that text message, and I'm doing 50 other things before I realize that I was only opening this just to respond to a text message.
I'm not getting one until we see Microsoft Office for the Apple Watch. As soon as that happens, I'm in.
No, I don't know if you know. Yeah, Excel. They've announced Excel will run on the Apple. It's going to be fantastic. You'll be able to do spreadsheets.
I've been recommending that with this device that you not get this model version 1.0. And that's kind of a truism in general for technology. But if you look at Apple's new entries into categories, each one of them, the iPhone and the iPad, each one of them, when version 2 came out, it was so much more affordable and so much more capable, thinner, lighter. I think that you're going to see that happen here. I mean, remember what the iPad 1 looked like compared to the iPad 2 and the iPhone compared to the iPhone 3GS. I think people who buy this now and anticipate that they're going to be happy a year from now are going to be really sad.
I would love to unpack that, Dwight. So I agree with you.
There's a huge difference here. The iPhone was extremely popular when it first came out. It was a big deal. The iPad, when it first came out, was extremely popular. It was a big deal. This, I'm not seeing that kind of similar demand. And I think the second model will be just as crappy as the first.
Well, I agree with Dwight on certain areas, right? So pairing with your phone, right? This idea of tethering is somehow limiting, right? And I don't know.
Yeah, I wouldn't get one until it's standalone. It's got to be standalone.
So it's got to be standalone. So I'm just curious, with the areas that you think that the first generation is limited and where maybe a generation two or three wouldn't be, I'd love to hear your thoughts on that.
Well, there have been stories reporters have indicated that Apple was not particularly happy with the number of sensors, particularly in terms of health and other capabilities in it. So I think you'll see more sensors that make it even more useful then. I think there's a good chance that it may be Wi-Fi standalone in the second generation. I don't think we're yet at the technology relation to batteries and LTE that you'll see standalone for wireless over LTE. Although you got to know that the cell companies seeing yet another revenue stream from your watch as well as your iPhone are probably going to be drooling over that capability. But I think that the standalone is the number one thing. And I think it needs to be thinner and lighter. I don't really see a lot of women being interested in buying this watch at this point. I think they need to have a version that's much smaller for women's wrists.
Apple's going to sell 5 million of them.
Five?
That was the leak. And that it came from the Wall Street Journal. And I think
I was with a bunch of nursery school dads last night over a bottle of scotch. Okay. And we had a bet. We had a little wager.
These stories.
So I can. That's how I bring you
He's
into
a trained professional.
Over a bottle of scotch. We were sitting by the fire. Four of us at this little potluck get together last night. All tech, tech guys. Some from the advertising world and just disparate lives. All with preschoolers and nursery schoolers. And we're talking about the Apple Watch. And we all laid down our bets as to how many we think that we'll sell. And different numbers being floated around. And remember, people thought that the iPad would sell far less than it did in that first year. And I said, I threw down the gauntlet. I said, I'll bet you guys a bottle of scotch, 17 million.
Whoa!
The predictions are 15 million, right? I predict 17 million this year in 2015. What do you bet? Because the number,
I think you're actually right. I think that the 5 million is for the quarter. Right. So I think you're actually pretty close.
It's complete insanity if that many watches are sold.
I do believe that it'll sell most in the first quarter, and it will taper off until version
2.0. Like a bad movie.
Pretty quickly.
Like a bad movie.
But even if it only sold 5 million and the average price were, let's say, $500, it's a good couple of billion dollar business.
Right.
It's good enough for Apple to keep doing it. And I think you're right, Dwight. I don't think this is – but that's a truism. This is not going to be as good as the next one or the next
But with Apple's first generation, first category entries, it's almost always a prototype. The look, the feel.
I don't think this is that.
No, it doesn't feel that way.
I don't think it is that.
I got to say, this doesn't – first of all, it doesn't feel heavy. I hear a lot of women saying they want this. You read my Twitter stream. You see people in the halls I talk to. More women say they want this than anything else.
And they probably want the sport one, right? I'm thinking for running and
And it's gorgeous.
This plastic band.
I'm sorry, that's fluoroelastomer, Mr. Dvorak.
Plastic band.
Christy Turlington rubber.
I thought for sure rubber band. Once I saw it, the aluminum is gorgeous. And you're right, Leo. There's no appreciable difference in quality from
the same watch. You don't get the same sapphire crystal.
So for a first generation. Be crazy to
I would buy the 350, and $350 isn't a bad price.
No, it's a giveaway.
The Android Wear watches are $200 to $250. It's in the ballpark.
Nah.
I suspect I'm curious about the marketing theory behind having a range. I can't think of any product in the world that has a range from $350 to $17,000. Can you think of any product that has a range that wide?
Other than cars.
But not even
cars,
a car.
For sure.
Well,
although you can't really get a car for $350.
What percent increase over $350 is $17,000? It's a lot.
It's just to see how dumb people are. It's a test.
I don't think there's a car with that range.
It's an intelligence test, right?
Holy crap, look at these guys.
Other watches, maybe, yeah.
It's like you can buy, a Land Rover, and you get basically the same car without the name for like $50,000, $60,000 less that does the exact same thing just as well.
There you go. I feel like this is actually more mature than one would think. Apple really is betting the farm on this one.
I don't think so.
It's driven by Johnny Ive.
The farm? Come on.
They're betting their reputation. If this is a flop.
They've had other flops.
Not this level. Now, I mean, you're remaking the retail experience. You're remaking the retail experience. So by appointment, come in. The tables are completely different. You're rolling out the Edition and Select, you know, and Select high-end watch stores or whatever, and certain, you know, certain Apple retail experiences. To Leo's point, the SKUs, you have a wide range of SKUs. They're trying to
different SKUs.
Too many.
They're trying to figure out. I mean, I just think, again, to Dwight's point, we're at this moment where in a few years, clearly this will be its own standalone device. But though, does Apple see it as the future, you know, the iPhone, the iPod denigrated? Is the iPhone heading that way? Will that device, that communications device, head the same way? And will the watch be the play? Is that actually where we're going to be communicating?
The problem is that you do have a UI issue and the size of the screen. And I think unless you combine gesture and voice and other things become so good that you don't need to touch the screen, then you may get there. And that may be the biggest advance that Apple could make in future versions is a combination of gesture and voice, and Siri gets really, really good.
Can I jump in just real quick with one point on this also?
Jason Howell, producer and the host of All About Android.
I've got all these things I'm thinking about in this conversation. I think it's fascinating. Apple is great at innovating, obviously, and talking 2 or 3 years down the line as far as like where the watch heads. Dwight, you were talking about thinner, smaller, but standalone. Those things are at odds with each other, don't you think? Is Apple the company to be able to stretch a battery longer than it currently is right now, but with a smaller form factor? Because I think the masses, that would be the case. People would want it to be a little bit smaller, but then there goes the battery. How does that happen?
I think you need it smaller for women. I don't necessarily think in terms of the size of the watch.
It's not that big, is it? The 38mm is appropriate for women, I think.
But I'm thinking just in terms of style and design. I'm not thinking necessarily in terms of thickness.
I've had the Samsung standalone watch. I can't remember what it was, the Gear S or whatever.
You've had them all.
That thing is ridiculous. Well, it looks like an iPhone melted around your wrist.
Right. And when it's standalone, there's so much more demand on the hardware. Right?
I don't want a standalone. This is exactly what I want, which is the thing that's missing. I've mentioned this before, but the thing that's missing from the iPhone, the reason I went to an Android phone, is the widgets. The ability to turn on an Android phone and without launching an app, get all the information I need, calendars, messages, weather, what news, whatever I'm looking for, you set up the widgets on an Android phone so that you don't have to launch an app. All you get on an iPhone is a static grid of icons. So what Apple's been missing, from my point of view, is that quick glance interface, and the watch is exactly what I get from the Android widgets. To me, the watch is a natural adjunct for the iPhone, and the only thing that'll get me back to using an iPhone, I suspect. And I also think we don't really know until we wear it for a month, right? Exactly.
And so my 30 minutes is bunk, and I'm just writing up a piece I'm going to put up on my blog. But, you know, like I said, the watch won't save us from our crappy behavior. It's not, you know, but it's going to limit your distractions. And so I think staring at a watch
hours on end is no less annoying than somebody staring at their smartphone screen.
But you really don't want
exactly.
to. In that time, you're really the things that are most.
If you get engaged with it, you're going to be looking at it. You're going to be tweaking it for the first week, probably.
Right, but it's insulting to the people you're around.
John, what are you playing with?
I was just looking at the menus of the Leica camera, the Sony A7.
Never mind.
It's insulting to the people you're around.
Noticeably,
if you look at your wrist, what that says is, I need to see what time it is because I need to be somewhere else, or I'm not interested.
That quick glance is an insult to do that.
Yeah.
Did you read that Financial Times piece that Johnny Ive was featured on Johnny Ive? And it was interesting. He was quoted as saying that one of the things he noticed with wearing a watch over the years, and we're all guilty of this, right? We do this with our phones too, I think. But we glance down to see what time it is, and we forget that we looked at it, so we have to glance a second time. And so his idea with the watch is that it's always there. We almost don't even pay attention to it. We want it to be light, and almost you're ignoring it most of the time. And so that's one of the things that Johnny Ive said drove the design process for the Apple Watch, was really keeping it out of the way so you're not really paying attention to it.
There is an amazing blog post that everybody should read, I think. from a designer and manufacturer of products. His name is Greg Koenig. He's a product designer. He deeply analyzed the Apple videos. I mean, far beyond, you know, frame by frame. And since he knows a little bit about hardware manufacture and metallurgy, he was able to talk a little bit about the process. And I tell you, if you read this, you will, one thing you will at least see is that Johnny Ive, following in the footsteps of Steve Jobs, has driven Apple's production team to an intensity and a craftsmanship and a perfectionism that is unparalleled. I mean, what they're doing to make this watch, the cheap one or the expensive one, is unprecedented. And only a company that produces 75 million iPhones every quarter, 25 million iPhones. In fact, he begins the post saying Apple sells a 787's weight worth of iPhones every day. only a company that produces things on that scale could do this. And the metallurgy, you know, there are many standard things they're doing. For instance, in order to make the gold watch hardened, they are not, it's not about alloying, it's about something called work hardening, which is a well-known industrial process. In this case, they use rollers to squeeze a perfectly formed gold ingot many, many times, each time compressing the ingot by microns and creating a super hard form of gold. They're doing things that nobody does. Crazy stuff. Ultrasonic testing of each watch case to make sure there's no metallic imperfections. This is a great article. Even if you think the watch is a terrible thing, you can't come away from reading it without being impressed by Apple's commitment to detail.
I just don't first of all, I just don't understand. There were a lot of naysayers, Leo, you recall, after the iPad event. And those were people who were not mostly not in the room and got a chance to actually hold one,
right,
and see what a remarkable device it was to actually hold and have like this internet in your hands. I think the same is true of people who weren't in the room of the Apple Watch. And I agree with the sort of specs that we all get excited about, right? The battery. Oh, this is, we wish we could probably have it for 3 days, 4 days, 7 days, like the Pebble, right? Johnny Ive mentioning that it'll wake you up. Well, that, how are you going to do that if you're charging it every night after 18 hours, you know? So all of those things,
very
right?
Gentle, it's going to be tap on your wrist.
It's going to be thinner. But yeah, this all goes out the window for guys like us. Once young, like, Japanese girls are using it to draw emojis to their girlfriends in school. And that's when these things take off. I mean, who among us would have predicted the success of things like Snapchat?
Right.
You know, we didn't know about it until the kids were using it. So
the kids ain't going to be buying Apple Watches.
I would like to know why.
You think?
You know, the more I look at this design, I just don't understand why some of these guys don't get a clue and put the battery in the wristband.
Because then the wristband won't flow around your wrist.
No, I think you could make
like a waterfall.
You could make a battery that would flow around your wrist.
I don't know. I really don't know if we'll know what the watch means.
We'll find out in about
6 months.
6 months.
I really think that a lot of people should consider buying the cheap one. And you know what? What is going to happen? Clayton,
cheap.
Confirm this or not? But I bet you, you and Natalie will both buy one. I know Lisa and I will both buy one. They're still going to sell two for every one they sell because it's kind of pointless unless you can send your heartbeat to your loved one.
It's like a walkie-talkie. Exactly. And,
well, I'm waiting a year.
I'm very sick about that if you ask me.
It sounds hokey. And once you feel it with those taps.
John's never been in love. He doesn't understand.
I've been in love plenty.
I fall in love every day.
But the idea of sending my heartbeat to somebody else is a bit much.
Or, you know, I don't know.
Borders on cornball.
It does.
Love
but
is
honey,
cornball.
I'm on my way home. Or
yes. Oh, not even that. Just a little. If you draw a little heart on your watch and Natalie sees that little heart that you drew, well, that's love, man.
No,
that's
it's not. Love. It's a little heart you drew. It could be
beautiful.
Bullcrap. You could be with somebody else while you're doing this.
I think there will be other things, Doris.
I got to do something for the old lady at home.
I tell you, Lisa didn't want to watch. I said, you have to have one. How am I going to draw little pictures of my penis?
Exactly.
Oh,
that's
so loving. I mean, think about it. Think how more effective the relationship between Anthony Weiner and Sidney Leathers would have been. I think
that they will sell them in pairs. I really do. Unless you're a sad, lonely person like John, and then there's no reason at all to buy it.
Yeah.
I'm going to withhold judgment. I am impressed by what Apple's done, and I think that there's a lot of potential there. I've worn an Android Wear watch for 6 months, and
you have it on?
No, I don't.
Oh, you got no watch on?
Because I brought my iPhone. Because I'm trying to live the La Vida iPhone.
Okay, never mind. I just wanted to make sure that and people noticed that you don't have a watch on. And one of the smartest things is the multiple
sizes. You know, again, to Dwight's point about the sizes. You know, my friend Joanna Stern and I were flying out together to the Apple event, and she was wearing one of the Android Wear watches.
Android Wear. She was wearing the Moto 360. That's what we've all.
And but she took it off. She's like, I can't wear it anymore. And what? I had mine on at the time, but she's like, it's just too big. And I was joking because it looked like a sundial on her arm. You know, it looked like a Fred Flintstone style thing. So this giant watch, and so she's not wearing anything right now. And so, and the smaller, even our friend Serenity Caldwell, who does roller derby, we were out there hanging out, and she thought almost that the larger one was just a tad too big.
Yeah.
So she was actually thinking that she might go for the larger one, and she thought, well, it was just a hair too big, and the small one was just right. So it'll be interesting to see how what women think of these and those sizes.
I can't wait to get one. But then, you know, I also bought the new Chromebook Pixel, so that shows you what an idiot I am.
What's wrong with the Chromebook Pixel?
The Pixel 2 came out.
Yeah, I know. Just
$999 for a
seems
browser.
Seems a bit high. Yeah, seems a you bit high for a browser.
I love it.
Oh, okay.
It's awesome.
What is your favorite feature of that? Is the LTE?
The new one doesn't have LTE.
Oh,
so that isn't.
Oh yeah, right.
900.
Now, it's a gorgeous screen. It's a weird 3:2 aspect ratio. They're doing what Apple's doing, which is it's USB Type C, but they do a left one and a right one, and they still have normal connectors as well. But that's kind of cool because I've been charging it with the USB C. You can't put it in wrong. You could put it on either side. But the thing that it's snappy.
Wow, Leo, that's astonishing.
I'm easily amused. It's snappy. It's really fast. And I was very negative about Chrome OS when it first came out. I even got a little verbal battle with Sundar Pichai at Google over it. And he was a believer. I have become a believer. I really think that for most people, the security, this is, by the way, super secure. This thing's locked down.
I got my mom a Chromebook for Christmas.
Great choice, don't you think, for people who don't need a lot of computing.
And have a lot of money to throw away?
Well, $999
is crazy. No, not a Pixel. I didn't get
it. Yeah, $300 is normal and right for it.
I got
on the other hand,
ones that blow up.
If you like Chromebook and then you get the Pixel, you're getting like this beautiful thing. I love it.
It is lighter. I got to play with one, and it's slightly lighter.
Do you have it
slightly
here?
Thinner.
I did. I should have brought it so you could play with it and break it. But I didn't bring it. No,
probably
I'm sorry to say.
Effortless.
12 hours battery life. That's nice. That's nice. You charge it at night. In fact, this is going to be my life going forward. I'm going to have a little rack where I put all my devices, my Apple Watch, my Apple phone, my Pixel, all I plug them all in at night. I get up in the morning, say, hello, friends, unplug them, play with them all day.
Yeah. But as a photographer, I know
this
that
is
you...
a life
no,
of
but
desperation.
I'm still
gonna,
you're right. And as a, I still need a desktop. This is not your only computer.
You'll need a desktop.
For many people, it will be, but because I like to do computer programming and photography, for both of those, I need a real computer. But that's a little... I mean, that's not universal.
Right.
And actually, you know,
this is getting better.
It has an SD card slot, and Google Photos
Holy
will
crap.
Automatically import
it's
the photos.
Astonishing the features of this thing for $999.
That's $300 less than it used to cost.
Huh?
Got Snapseed built in, right? Now you can do quite a bit of
Google's getting very close.
Pretty impressive.
Getting close to something.
Yeah.
Is there a version with LTE available, or is
not
it
yet.
Just...
No. Not yet.
Yeah,
no?
Weeks, right? Because that's the way they did it last time. They rolled out the non-LTE versions a few weeks ahead of the
There's
the
some question about whether they will ever do an LTE version. I don't know what the thinking is there, but some people are saying, nah, they've said no. Nevertheless, I don't know why
you like
I brought
the aspect
that up.
Ratio?
Yes, and I like the touch. And by the way, you can now pinch and zoom.
On the Pixel?
Now how much would you pay? Yeah,
I would pay over maybe $200, $199. You think
you can when you're looking at a web page? Used to be you can only pinch and zoom in some very limited situations. Now you can for much of it zoom in and stuff.
Wow.
I don't know. I feel like I don't know.
I feel like you've been scammed.
Well, this has been a bad few months because I bought the Dell XPS, the new 13-inch, very very nice.
Okay.
I bought the Google Chrome Pixel.
Yeah, $8,000 lens over there on that camera.
But then No, well, that was that's
that
not that's neither
also,
here nor there.
That camera's also expensive.
That's not that's something that's my private life. This is the stuff I have to get for my my business life.
You wait,
and
you
now let's talk about the MacBook, okay? Because
yeah,
a lot of money, $1,299,
but it's a real computer.
Is it? Oh, is it, John? Is it?
I don't know. I don't have one, so I don't
know. Let's talk about that, and when we take a break and come back.
Oh, a teaser.
I have to pay for my camera.
It's about time.
No, the story on this lens is I wasn't going to buy it. Everybody says it's the best lens ever, and then they said, but it's 9 to 12 months back ordered. So
and you
I
had
thought,
an opportunity.
I thought I should order. No, no. I thought I should order it, but I don't have to buy it for a year. I'll cancel it in a couple
of
months. Oh,
so you got suckered by the phony baloney back order
thing.
Yeah. Oh.
So I thought, well, I better order it now because it'll take a year to get it.
You got it a week later.
Yeah, a week later. First they say, oh, no, it's back ordered. You'll never. Yeah.
Wow, they reeled you in.
The next thing, I get a message from B&H Photo. Your lens is on the way. We charged your card.
That's hilarious.
Sucker. Hey, did you miss anything this week on Twitter? We had a great week.
Uh-oh.
I think Jason Howell has put together a little montage.
Oh, no.
Of some of the things that happened this week on Twitter.
Previously on Twitter.
Fun fact, a group of meerkats is called a mob, a gang, or a clan.
Maybe this is the way we should do the show from now on.
Hi, meerkat.
Tech news today.
The CIA has been trying to break Apple security for years. The agency reportedly hired researchers to crack the security keys used to encrypt data on Apple iPhones and iPads.
This Week in Law.
A federal court jury in Los Angeles came out with a decision awarding $7+ million worth of damages on the notion that the Blurred Lines track was inspired.
Having copyright infringement premised on recreating the vibe or the look and feel is, in fact, problematic, especially if the elements that are protectable under copyright aren't really copied.
All about Android.
Our friend Nicole Lee over in Engadget wrote a great post that the headlines piece for it all. HTC's Vive made me believe in VR. She says, I walked away from the demo a complete believer, not just in VR, but also in HTC and Valve. I can't wait to see what's next.
What about when the goggles go around your nose?
Yeah.
And it's even more immersive.
Mac Break Weekly.
If you take a MacBook home, you probably want to take home this $79 USB-C digital AV multi-port adapter. You plug this into the Type-C and you can power up. You can have USB.
Holy crap, is that elegant.
Yeah.
Twit, now also available in several colors of unapologetic plastic.
I gave myself props.
It's not plastic. It's a fluoroelastic polymer, if you don't mind.
Polymer means plastic.
Oh. Well, there you go. So it's not rubber. It's plastic.
If it's a polymer, yeah.
It is. It's a polymer.
Of course, most rubber is plastic, too.
What?
Synthetic rubbers.
Oh, my God.
Pretty much a plastic.
Let's see what's coming up in the
week. Coming up this week, the tech giant show CeBIT kicks off in Hanover, Germany tomorrow. Adobe and Oracle report earnings Tuesday. South by Southwest, which started Friday and is going on now, continues until Tuesday. Apple joins the Dow Jones Industrial Average on Wednesday. They're replacing the AT&T. And on Friday, the Sony PlayStation 4 goes on sale in China at long last. That's what's coming up this week. Back to you, Leo.
I thought Apple was on the NASDAQ. It isn't. It's on the Dow. It's on the NYSE.
There are the.
Why isn't it a NASDAQ stock?
I believe
tech stocks.
I believe that they moved recently.
They moved.
Yeah.
I remember when they
And by the way, and there's only recently. It's most companies that move from NASDAQ to the NY stock exchange tend to have a fall off.
Value.
Their stock goes. Price goes down.
Why?
I don't know. This is something Horowitz pointed out.
Didn't happen to Apple, I guess.
Not yet. It doesn't happen right away.
Not yet.
Not yet. Well,
actually, I remember when the New York Stock Exchange was wooing Apple. Because if you're like an old-timey stock, you get one letter. Like AT&T is T. Right?
Yeah.
It's T.
Yeah. X is U.S. Steel.
U.S. Steel. X. And they said, we'll give you A. And Apple didn't do it. They should have taken it. A.
Well, the big deal is that it's now...
Hey.
The big deal is now it's part of the Dow Jones Industrial.
Yeah, which is a meaningless number.
No, it's not that meaningless.
People talk about it. Really? It's only 30 stocks.
It's
small.
They all go up and down pretty much. They want it to...
Isn't it hysterical?
It's going to be a big component. It's the problem. So when Apple finally collapses,
it's
which...
It's huge.
I know.
Oh.
Okay, hey, you can say...
Short. Are you selling short the Dow?
You'd short Apple, but not in the next few years, but at some point.
Next few years? Well, when?
As soon as they get rid of Tim Cook.
Okay. So that you've heard it here first.
Well, I'm just using the model that what happened when Scully took over. Scully took over Apple.
Yeah.
The company
drove it into the ground.
No, he didn't. It was 10 times more sales when Scully was there. He did a 10X.
Wow.
And then things flattened out a little bit. So they said, well, we got to do better than this. And they got rid of Scully.
Spindler
comes in. The stock tanks. And then they bring in another
Emilio.
Guy. Really tanks.
Yeah.
Boom. So Scully was actually a benefit to the company.
There you go. I'm learning
people
something
people always
day.
Blame Scully.
Well, you might say Scully just came in at the right time. He was the guy who created the Newton. There was a product.
iPad. He's just ahead of his time.
Our show today brought to you by the folks at Shutterstock Images. You know, I was watching House of Cards. Good show. I don't know if you ever see it. Ever hear of it? On Netflix. At the end, it says...
Apparently, the third season stinks.
Yeah, it's terrible.
No, it's good.
Well, it's different.
It's different.
It's filled with propaganda.
For Windows Phone, actually. There's a lot of Windows Phone.
Oh, that's probably product placement. They got money for that.
Oh, yeah. They got some. But then there's also Apples and there's Windows machines.
Samsung with the tossing the image from one screen to the other. It was a Samsung.
Oh, that was so bad.
That was bad.
It's like,
and very blatant.
Stop the show. Now watch as I take my Samsung tablet and throw it to the screen. And then continue the show. That was the worst.
Oh,
it was like in
Man of Steel. Remember when? Zod was taking over everything, and they were all on Windows phones. Like all of these reporters are using Windows phones.
Yeah,
yeah.
And
right.
She says, "Even my RSS feed." She holds up her.
That's
he's being
right.
manipulated by
That's
Zod.
Right. Oh my God. Anyway, at the end of House of Cards, one of the things I noticed is stock footage by Shutterstock. And what I realized, I've seen now in movies, a lot of places they're using Shutterstock for their, and this is a 4K show, for their 4K video. So if you need a aerial shot of Washington, D.C., you're not going to get a helicopter. You're going to go to Shutterstock.com. They now have 49 million high-quality images, stock photos, illustrations, over 2.5 million video clips. It's an amazing resource. And every week they add more, 370,000 images on average every single week. It's a good thing they have the best search in the business, an amazing search engine that lets you find everything. There you go, Washington, D.C., everything you need very quickly. Search not only by topic, but like how many people are in it, the gender of the people, all sorts of interesting ways to search in Shutterstock. Now, you don't even have to have a Shutterstock. You know, buy anything from Shutterstock to use it. You can use it for free. Just create a free account. You don't have to give them a credit card. Now you can not only search, but save images to the Lightbox, share it with other people. Use their amazing app. The iPad app won a Webby Award because it's so gorgeous. But also, I find a great inspiration for thinking and writing. Just an amazing place. And international, too. Multilingual customer service. More than a dozen countries. Full-time customer support throughout the week. It's Shutterstock. If you're looking for an image for your website, your publication, for your advertisement, for your TV show, your movie, Shutterstock. Oh, bacon, and bacon we trust. Sorry. Shutterstock. Did you search for bacon?
Sometimes I get hungry.
Talk about inspiration. My mouth is literally watering. Shutterstock. Damn you.
I'm sorry, Jason. I didn't mean
Howell.
To do this to you, Leo.
Even Twit is better bacon. With bacon.
Oh, everything's better with bacon, baby. It's meat candy. Shutterstock.com, save 20% off image. Stop it. I feel like my dog Ozzy now. Now I know how Ozzy feels. We're sitting there. We're eating steak. He's sitting on the floor going, I want some. Shutterstock.com for 20% off an image subscription pack. Broccoli.
Spinach. I figured we'd balance.
Shutterstock.com for 20% off image subscription packages on new accounts. We have an offer code for you. Remember this. It's free. You don't need to give them a credit card if you want to use the Lightbox. But if you want to buy TWIT315 for March 2015, TWIT315, Shutterstock.com. Is this the Ides of March? Is it the 15th?
Yep.
Yeah.
Today.
Yeah. This is the
day. Why I'm here.
Julius Caesar got schnookered.
Assassinated.
Yeah.
On the, steps of the Roman Forum. Yesterday was Pi Day. In fact, an unusual Pi Day because it was 3-1-4-1-5. And then if you at 9:26:53, what is the? Do you know all the digits of Pi? You don't.
Nine comes next. That's
yeah.
Yeah, we did it live on the show yesterday.
Did you?
Morning. We did a news alert, and we had fun with it for the whole minute. It was the greatest minute of my life.
It is the ratio of the circumference of a circle to its diameter.
Which means you could eat whatever you want and not notice.
You know what Microsoft did? Did they do this for you? Microsoft sent me pie yesterday.
What?
Did they?
They sent you a pie?
Microsoft. I love this. Also Einstein's birthday. But anyway, they sent me, and they had like three apps they wanted to promote on Windows Phone. They sent me pie, and there was apple pie and lemon chess. Was quite good. I think it's probably still out there.
Oh, I'm going to go get it.
Have a piece of pie.
Yeah.
And then they sent me a Cortana lunchbox.
Now, that's something. That's probably a collectible.
I don't know. I think they just put a round sticker on a lunchbox.
Oh, it's just a sticker on a lunchbox?
Well, but I opened it up. Inside was a Windows Phone.
Oh, they gave you a Windows Phone.
It's a $50 Windows Phone.
The cheap one.
It's really cheap.
That's good. That's Microsoft at its best.
I'm not knocking it. I'll take it.
You'll never use it.
Oh, no. No, but still. I ate the pie, though. Does that count?
You should eat the phone.
I have a Cortana lunchbox.
Maybe it was poison.
Poison pie?
Right.
I just want to point out, Apple doesn't invite me to events, but Microsoft sends me pie.
Generic lunchbox with a sticker on it.
I know. That's why I can't get any money out of it.
Cheap bastards. Phone is missing.
You know what you could do?
Looking for the phone.
You could flip it on its ear. You could sign it, put it up on eBay right now, and raise money for charity.
Oh, I could do that, but I'm not going to because I'm grumpy.
You should just say Cortana a lot. I am
really hopeful now that this Type-C connector is on two, not one, but two, the computers, that we'll see more of these. And someday, the day will come when we will no longer have to buy proprietary power adapters for laptops. That day has come with phones. Look at that. There's the adapter. It's a USB micro plug. Good, I would love to see Type-C on computers.
Yeah.
Everywhere.
Do you have a prediction? So how long, let's throw it down, how long until just about every laptop comes with a USB C port?
Well, I figure is happening. This happened with the MacBook Air. Everybody in the industry said, wait a minute, no CD-ROM, no DVD drive, you can do that? You can make it really thin, unibody aluminum. Let's wait and see. How does it do? And then after it sold well, Intel invented the Ultrabook, which is an exact clone of it. And every manufacturer made basically MacBook Airs with running Windows. So they're all going to sit back and say, okay, let's see. How does that work for them? Because Apple's been pretty bold here. Did you play with the MacBook?
I did. And the keyboard is really fascinating. And with the butterfly keys instead of the scissor keys, so you really don't feel any bouncing at all on the keypad. And it takes some getting used to when you first put your fingers on that keypad. The keys are wider.
Only Apple could say, you know, laptop keys are wobbly because they use a scissor spring. So we invented a new spring. I think the wobble, first of all, I never noticed.
My understanding is the new one's wobblier than this. This is not wobbly. This is not wobbly.
It's a little wobbly. Look at, feel that? See that?
No.
Even Apple
has a little gate, but I think that's intentional. We've invented a key that conforms to your finger.
There's something cheaper.
And moves to match where your, see, now the key just flat.
It's flat, yeah. And the touchpad, the trackpad, is remarkable, and it's fooling with your brain.
Touch. Yeah,
yeah, the force touch trackpad.
That's what Serenity and Jason and Renee said on our MacBreak Weekly. They've taken out the click, right? It doesn't have a physical press, but they have haptic feedback, so that you think it's clicking.
Right. So here's just a trackpad on my desk, and I have my laptop in front of me. But yeah, normally this would clicks down. So you actually get the click. It's an actual click. With the new trackpad, there's no movement at all. It doesn't move at all, but your brain thinks it does.
Because it vibrates?
Because it vibrates. Hmm. So, and the harder you press, the more of a feedback you get from this. And I'm excited from the laptop perspective, I'm really excited for what it could do for iOS.
Yes.
Perhaps a removal of the home button.
They can't get rid of the home button because they need the fingerprint reader.
Well, couldn't they do that just on the glass itself?
Maybe they could.
Huh?
That's
anyway.
Interesting. Yeah, wouldn't that be cool?
But getting that feedback just from the – and it's fewer moving parts. But it's remarkable. There were a couple apps I played with just to see if you, for instance, have a folder or an image on your desktop, you hover over it and you press just a little bit harder. It'll bring up a preview mode of that particular image or file. And again, it's just fooling with your brain because you're not actually pushing on anything. Nothing's clicking, but it feels like it is. QuickTime video forwarding through, high speed, the harder you press, going into double, triple, speed as you watch this motorcycle rider going down. So some different areas in the operating system that you get to play with it, but it doesn't do that all over the place.
Apple neither confirms nor denies this will be in the new iPhones, but there is quite a bit of speculation that it will.
And just imagine for accessibility.
Yeah.
The potential in iOS for accessibility as it relates to, Force Touch. This is clearly where they're going.
I'm very intrigued. I can't wait to play with it. So you played with it. It works? You feel it works?
Yeah, it works really well. And I wish I could spend more time with it than I did. Of course, though, we'll have to wait till early April to get our hands on the MacBooks for testing. But
the controversy is this single port. So one Type-C port. It has a headphone port on the other side, and that's it.
So the single port, and the only other hole on the whole device is a headphone jack.
Yeah.
So is this the MacBook for everyone? Clearly not. Is it the MacBook for power users? Clearly not. But it could be the widest spread adoption of MacBooks that we see.
Yeah.
But this does presage the death of the MagSafe. It looks like.
Thank God, because proprietary adapters. Suck. And every laptop has always had a proprietary.
Although the MagSafe is so, I don't know how many times I've kicked that thing out.
I agree with this.
And I have
it's
not
so funny.
It's a great
notebook.
Product.
It's so funny. That's how Apple sold it. How many times have you almost, tripped over your, and it pulls the laptop off the.
Steve Jobs said that on stage. Yeah. And it's so
And
right.
now it's
so
like, true. Oh, never mind.
He
Don't
is
forget
right.
that.
But, even the most recent iteration of the MagSafe has been poo-pooed in the press because
Andy Inoko says it falls off all the time. I haven't had that experience, but
yeah. But nevertheless, this was a very Apple product, the MagSafe.
They're taking a big chance, but only Apple, not only Apple, but this is what Apple's known
beginning
for.
Beginning of the end, Leo.
Of what?
Taking chance, the next thing you know, down the drain.
Down the drain. Or innovation.
I might as well stick with that theory because everyone hates me with my attitude toward the Apple anyway.
Someone wrote on My Meerkat, Matt McHale writes, does Dvorak have a heart? Maybe that's why he doesn't like the Apple Watch. It won't be able to watch his heartbeat.
Ooh.
Wow.
It's
that
like
got to me.
It's like giving
I don't
him,
know what to think now.
It's like giving him a mirror. Can't see himself.
Not there. I'm just going to take as much abuse as you guys think you're dishing out.
No, we love you, John. You know that. I do think it's a bold thing to do, and I've seen a lot of hate for Apple. Why would and also the Core M processor that they're using, it is a Broadwell chip, but it's very slow, but it's very low power. It'd be interesting to watch how this does. I thought I was going to get it. I had that techno lust that Phil Schindler was talking about. He said literally hashtag techno lust. But then I thought better of it, and I.
If you've got a MacBook Pro, a modern MacBook Pro, there's really no reason. To lust over this. I think it's just it's an attempt by Apple to sell more of those $29 adapters that you have to have every time you buy a new MacBook.
$79.
$79.
And why Apple, for a $1,299 computer, couldn't bundle the gosh darn adapter in?
Oh,
$79.
I hate that.
You didn't get enough with the $1,299. Now you want $79?
Yeah. It is interesting.
I don't plug much into my laptop, though. I feel like there are people who you should look at how you use it. Are you always plugging stuff into your laptop, or is it? It's the same thing with the DVD. Oh, we got to have a DVD drive, and then you. But when do you ever use that? You don't miss that.
I got a super drive. I got a super drive here for my new iMac.
You need it.
And I never use
never
it.
Use
I use it like once a year. And
well,
it's
right
because
now,
I found
I've
an
got...
old CD that I wanted to burn that I forgot that I didn't
put
in my.
That did happen to me though. When I get CDs or DVDs, I don't have any way to use them at all now. I can't. So I have to keep an old Mac Pro around. I guess I should buy a super drive.
Yeah.
It's just weird. It's like, I don't have it. People send me DVDs and I'm looking. I don't have a hole for it.
So right now I've got plugged into my MacBook Pro. I have the USB headset that you sent me. I've got power. Right. I've got.
That's not typical.
And I wanted to, but I forgot my iPad. I have this app called Duet that lets you turn your iPad into a second Mac screen. It's great. And I was going to use that today too, but I forgot my iPad.
But really, that's unusual. Certainly, as Clayton said, some people, this is not for some people. Or most people.
Yeah, there's no way I could use that product unless I got a bunch of $79 adapters.
I think one of the curious things about the innovation on this, though, on USB-C is Apple's role in the creation of it.
Did they have a role in it? I thought it was just a standard.
It's a standard, but according to John Gruber and his sources, he says they basically invented it.
Oh, interesting.
That they didn't invent it. That they basically invented it. That he said, look, I'm not saying that they took full
John
credit
Gruber
for
thinks
it.
Apple invented the sun as well.
Didn't they?
No, that makes sense. I mean, Apple invented FireWire. They were with Intel, but they were very instrumental in that. I don't think they invented Thunderbolt, but I'm sure they had a big hand in that.
Schiller said on stage that they work closely with Intel on USB-C.
Okay.
I mean, he made that point. So
I would love to see it in every laptop going forward. I don't want to see just one port in every laptop going forward. But wouldn't this be an amazing world where you could buy a couple of power adapters and would work on all your laptops?
Where's the profits in that?
You got high speed data transfer. It powers the device.
100 watts. Could do as much as 100 watts of power.
Right. But this is also interesting to see maybe the death of Thunderbolt.
I think it is the death of Thunderbolt.
It's about time.
But, you know, Apple does this, right? They created FireWire and FireWire 400, pushed 800, killed it. Said, no, you don't need 800 now. You need Thunderbolt now. Bought a lot of $100 cables, a lot of Thunderbolt devices. No, you don't want that. You want Type-C USB.
Yeah.
You don't want that.
That's why I stay away from the platform.
I don't know. I like it that there is somebody out there who's willing, unlike Microsoft,
to gouge their customers, and the customers say, thank you very much.
I have another way of thinking of it. Who's willing to say to customers, we're moving on. We're moving on. The future is here. Well, Microsoft does the opposite, right? Microsoft makes sure everything works with Windows 95, no matter what.
From IBM.
I think it's good to have one company that says, screw you. You bought this 3 years ago. It's time to move on.
Move along.
And I, for one, am happy to accept my Apple overlords. I think that this is innovation.
I, for one, welcome is the phraseology.
I'm sorry. Welcome, my Apple overlords. Apple is also going to own HBO Now, but just for 3 months. HBO has finally acknowledged the rumors, long-standing rumors, that they're going to do a $15 over-the-top version of HBO. That means you don't need a cable subscription to watch HBO on your Apple TV. They also dropped the price of the Apple TV to $69. That'll start sometime around Game of Thrones time.
Yeah, mid-April.
Yeah, we mentioned that at the beginning of the show, but I think that this is the other thing we didn't talk about is how important this is to break the hegemony of the cable networks over broadcast.
I think this is the first crack.
That word. You like that word?
That's a great word.
Yeah.
Well, Sling TV was the first crack.
Sling TV, $20. You get Sling ESPN, TV. You get CNN, a couple of Disney channels, some other
and
channels
AMC,
you don't care about.
AMC now. So that means you get The Walking Dead and Mad Men, two of the hottest shows on television.
That's part of Sling
and
TV?
And Better Call Saul.
Yeah. And if you watch, I was just watching Sling TV this afternoon. I'm a big fan. I watch it all the time. And I don't have cable where we go up to up in the woods.
Yeah.
And, just use that. And if you use it on a Roku 3, or it's super fast. And they've got the ads right there in line. You know, if you want AMC for Walking Dead, they've got the ads right inside of Sling TV for what's coming up. You can choose the interface is really easy. You can choose like what's on right now or just scroll through the channels. You got the cooking channel. You got the Food Network. You got ESPN, ESPN2. All the ESPN channels or live sports. I don't know that Sling TV was the first crack. ESPN seems to maybe have created the first crack, because often people pointed to ESPN and some of the major news networks for the reasons that they kept cable in the first place. Right. So when ESPN started decoupling itself and putting itself out there with the Watch ESPN apps, their new interface on the iPad and the iPhone is fantastic. I think you're starting to see over the next 5 years, everything changes.
It's not a surprise, though, that these power networks, the networks that can survive without cable companies, are doing this. But the little guys, you know, the Speed Channel, the National Geographic Channel, Fox News. When are they? No, I'm sorry. I had to throw that in. What? But you're not going to see them do that. They can't. They cannot survive without cable distribution.
You think that though? My brother was just visiting. He's an outdoorsman. He lives down in Texas and he hunts all the time. And he was just sitting here. I was doing some things around the house and he was just flipping around the channels. He's watching Velocity Network. It's a network. It's on my Fire. I never even knew I had it.
You can watch that though without over the top. No.
No, but what I'm saying is that I think there's an audience for those types of that type of programming. And I think that those audiences tend to find it. You know, they subscribe to those magazines that I've never heard of. They go to those events. They go to those things. So if you had an app where my brother Tim could just download the app right on his iPhone, he might do it. He might watch those shows.
Or if you bundled a bunch of them together.
Yeah, perhaps, like Sling has done. So,
right.
Or
join
the Sling movie.
Yeah.
Right.
Their service where you end up can do extra channels, extra sub-channels for $5 in packages. You know, I did a blog post last week in which I looked at if you took all of the major ones, Hulu, Sling TV, HBO Now, one of the add-on packs on Sling TV, and you kind of put all these together, you're paying about $65 a month, where you begin to approach the cost of some of the lowest TV-only cable packages.
Right.
So you're kind of getting back up there. If you've cut the cord to save money and you're trying to rebuild it, you're not going to save much money.
Well, that's the truth. I mean, I think that it's pretty obvious the cable companies have seen this coming. There's no way you're going to be able to get internet and all your channels for less than you're paying right now. Might even cost more.
So if you put together I'm not doing all those, but let's say that I'd pay about $65 for 100 megabits down. And you add that $6,000, that's $130, and suddenly I'm back to where I was before I dropped cable.
Clayton, you probably don't know these deals. I know the deals with Tech TV. When we signed with cable MSOs, the cable companies have all the power in that relationship. You're begging them, please carry my channel. And among other things they said, and this was 1998 through 2006, so it may have changed, but they said you may not stream your channel. You may not put more than 10 minutes of your content on
favored
the internet
nations.
Per hour.
Favored nations is what they call it.
Yeah. So I imagine those rules are still, or maybe not.
Well, it depends. I think part of the deal is whatever it is. I mean, the joke about Tech TV and Ziff Davis TV was that they couldn't get the local market, the San Francisco market. It took forever.
They never did.
I don't think they ever did.
Yeah.
Now, that's a horrible business.
Yeah, well, I wouldn't want to be a new cable channel, and I don't imagine there are very many new cable channels, but there are a lot of people who have existing cable channels, and I wonder if they have an over-the-top future or if they're just going to go away.
Yeah, what is it, like $6 a month or $5 a month? Some of the more expensive ones are ESPN,
$16 for ESPN.
$16?
Yeah.
So when
that's what the cable company pays per subscriber to ESPN.
Horrible.
That's the most expensive channel because everybody wants to watch ESPN. That's the one people want.
And ESPN's been pulling some stunts, too. I mean, if I'm not mistaken, the national championship game for the NCAA football was ESPN only, if I'm not mistaken. And I know that they're showing all these basketball games. And by the way, the brackets are out. They're showing all these basketball games on ESPN more than any place else. And they've been pulling this off, and it seems to me like a horrible thing to do, especially the NCAA, to do a deal with a cable company when they should be on broadcast television.
Let's take a break. You could check your brackets, Clayton and John.
I already know what they are.
You already picked?
There was one guy on ESPN, I believe, who picked him in advance. And
he was right.
Yeah.
All right. While we take a break, when we come back, let's talk about Hillary Clinton's email or something like that.
Giddy so up. Predictable.
Giddy up. You just go giggity.
So predictable.
Giddy up.
Giddy up again.
Giddy up. Our show today brought to you by ShipStation. Say that carefully. Actually, I love ShipStation. You may have used it. If you use Squarespace e-commerce, ShipStation is built in.
Ooh, yeah.
ShipStation allows you to do mail fulfillment in the easiest possible way. Whether you're using eBay, Amazon, Etsy, more than 50 other popular marketplaces and shopping carts, they create shipping labels for all the top carriers, UPS, FedEx, DHL, if you're doing international, of course, the U.S. Postal Service. In fact, you get a free USPS account, gives you access to deeply discounted USPS shipping rates, those rates that only the Fortune 500 could get. This basically makes you a big deal in shipping. No wonder it's the number one choice of online sellers. ShipStation.com, 98% customer satisfaction. 98%. We love ShipStation. It makes fulfillment simple. And now we got a great deal for you. You could try it free for 30 days. And if you use the offer code TWIT, get another 30 days. So 60 days free of ShipStation. If you are a seller, if you do it, we bought a mirror from Etsy the other day. It's like you don't want to get a package covered with postage stamps, right?
Yeah, and it depends if you collect stamps.
It was like bubble wrapped with tape all around. It was crazy. It looked like a crazy person sent it to me. Does not put out the best, most professional appearance. Okay? Just saying. ShipStation.com. Well, but I have to think twice about going back to them now. I don't know.
Why? You got the product. It was fine. Was it a good product?
It was a mirror.
You had to buy a mirror?
It was an Etsy mirror. Etsy, eBay, Amazon, Squarespace, Yahoo, all of the big merchants, everybody supports it, and it lets you ship so easily. You got to try it. ShipStation. Ship in a snap from ShipStation.com. And don't forget that TWIT offer. Click the microphone at the top of the page there. It says, what does that say? It's so tiny. It says,
Heard our ad?
Click the microphone, and you'll use the offer code TWIT. You'll get 60 days. See that? Free bonus month. I love it.
I've looked into this operation. I think this is probably what they've done is they've modernized it. Warehousing is not a new thing.
No.
There's tons of it. And you can find a place that would warehouse your stuff and drop ship. You can send them labels. But they've kind of put themselves in a position where they've done the hard part, which is the communications, the orders to the.
Right.
And do it all. In some modern fashion, because it has not been modernized.
You can even say, here's the package. Who's the best price for shipping? Things like that.
Well, you would probably set that up to do it automatically.
Yeah, it's really great. ShipStation.
I will be shipping books through them.
Are you?
Yeah. I think I'll do that.
Are you going to sell your own books direct now?
Yeah. Why not?
Print them too?
You use that operation that Amazon has set up out in North Carolina, whatever they're called.
And then they send you a big box of books?
They would send them straight to ShipStation.
They do it all.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's actually, a publisher gives you nothing at this point that you can't do yourself.
Well, it depends. A lot of people can't do publicity. They don't know how to do marketing. They don't know how to.
Well, yeah, John is so bad at marketing. But actually, if you think about it, you can hire a freelance editor, hire a freelance designer.
Actually, there's a lot of good copy editors floating around. Yeah. They're living in the sticks because they can't get jobs in New York anymore. And they work inexpensively. They're not dirt cheap by any means.
You don't want to, save too much on your copy editor.
So you get a copy editor. You put the thing together.
They get indexed. And then everything's done.
The indexer is a little challenging.
Is it?
Oh, yeah. That's a challenge.
You mean like that would be a good career for somebody to be an indexer?
There are people that are really good at it.
Oh, it's an art.
Indexing is
they
not
do,
easy. You see a lot of self-published books that have no index in the back.
Right.
You go, this guy. Because you couldn't deal with it. You can't. The automatic systems that are computerized, you can go on the web, they suck. They don't do a good job.
Pogue does his own indexes, which I thought was kind of interesting.
He does it on his own by himself.
Yeah, but what he does, he uses NetDragon, naturally speaking. So he'll go through the book and dictate the index, basically. Because that's what you have to do, right, is go through the text of the book and figure out what is a keyword.
Yeah, that's important if someone's going to look it up.
Page 51, I talk about. Yeah, isn't that clever?
Yeah, it is an interesting idea.
Yeah. I hope I haven't given away a proprietary secret.
It costs a lot of money to get for a good index. That's why Pogue is he was a cheap guy.
He's a cheapskate.
Yeah.
He's well known.
Yeah, well known as such.
No, I'm just kidding. I love David. All right, so Hillary Clinton's email. Now, there's a political angle to it, and I'm sure, Clayton, you've talked a lot about it. John, you've talked a lot about it. But there is a technical angle to it. She actually was running a Windows server in her basement, clintonemail.com, and a company called Venafil, which does, or Venafi, I'm sorry, Venafi TrustNet, keeps track of certificates and stuff. So they have historic data.
Oh, cool.
So because of it, they know, for instance, when clintonemail.com got a email certificate. They've done digital certificate analysis Three digital certificates were used with ClintonEmail.com since 2009. Those are well done, and they are good. But she was Secretary of State for 3 months before the server was encrypted or authenticated.
Huh. So what's interesting about this to me is that you read the New York Times piece this week, or a few days ago, about what the State Department was doing in February. They finally, in February, just last month, finally started archiving emails from senior officials at the State Department. So up until this point, even though they had been pushed to do so since, I think, about 2012 or so, the mandate came down from the Obama administration to make sure, I might be wrong on my date on the 2012, it might have been even 2009. It took them this long to actually get that adoption going at the State Department. So turns out that everyone's crying about Hillary Clinton's email and that she kept this private server. But it turns out, and I mentioned this on the air this morning, could it be possible that her own server is the best record of State Department communication that we
That'd
have?
That'd be ironic.
Wouldn't it be? But we can't subpoena it because it's a personal server. So whether or not Trey Gowdy and other members of Congress can get their hands on it. But that may be the only record of her time.
Wow.
Because she actually had her own server. Had she not, we wouldn't have anything.
There'd be no
record.
The
State Department doesn't archive it.
I think this is the smartest thing she could have done. God knows what crazy conniving that was going on that she erased. It was a smart move.
I don't know. I don't have a political opinion about it. But I do think it's interesting. All right, I'm going to keep it to myself. How about that?
Okay, that's more honest.
But I think her explanation. Share. No, I'll tell you. Oh, you want my opinion?
Yes.
Yeah, I think her explanation is credible. She didn't want to carry two BlackBerries.
Oh, brother.
And the one provided by the State Department allowed one email account. Everybody else was using one for private email, one for public. If you're doing that, you're making a decision every moment. This is private. This is public. And anything that you decide is private is no longer public record. So what's different from her doing that decision every moment of the day as she sends email than doing the decision at the end and saying, here's the 30,000 emails that were public that I would have used this BlackBerry for. And then I'm going to keep the 50,000 I would have used that BlackBerry for. How is that any different?
You have like 10 phones.
It's not technically different.
Technically, it sounds like exactly. I understand there are transparency rules, which she's violated. Nevertheless, it sounds like in the spirit of it, it's kind of the same thing.
Right. You're not inhibited from having your own personal email account.
Right.
Anybody in the federal government can. And you talk to anybody who works in the federal government, they'll tell you that one of the first things you do in your orientation is sign that paper saying that your communication, government communication, has to be to be archived and preserved. It has to go through the proper channels. So the fact that she had her own private email is fine. And she wants to talk about yoga or the other things she mentioned she was talking about.
Right. Oh, yeah.
That's fine.
There is the issue, and that's why I raised this issue of the certificate. There is a security issue, mostly because she would be, as many have pointed out, a very prime target for foreign governments and so forth because she's talking about trade agreements and things like that.
And yet,
U.S. servers are also prime targets. And in fact, this week, the State Department had to shut down its non-classified email because of malware.
Right.
So, it
doesn't mean that just because it's on government property that it's any more secure.
Good point.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, and look, God knows, we know that the NSA was snooping on members of Congress. I mean, they have everything. So by the way, doesn't the NSA probably have a copy of these emails anyway?
We hope so.
Well, and that was her other point, although we now know that that's not true, is that, I assumed that everything that I was sending to government officials was being archived anyway because they were archiving it.
Right. Well, interesting.
All right. There's the ethical issue of she knew what the law was, did not follow the law. But there's also purely practical point of view. I don't know if she did anything that was any different that she would have done just ad hoc at any moment. So, I'm going to send this one's personal. This one's private. She had to make those decisions at every step of the way.
So has anyone done an interview or found the guy who ran it? I know
I'd
that
love
his
to
name
find him.
Was
He's yeah, dead.
I know that his name
He's
was
dead.
Not correct.
They shot him.
His name was Netanyahu. No, I don't know. No,
The name was not correct on the documents
that
were initially released, and then later it was determined who he was. But I would love to talk to him and find out how it was set up and what kind of security was in place. And
you're
exactly
not alone in that. I'm
it's
sure.
some guy well, named did. Ben.
Jason.
Right. I mean, they had two Secret Service people watching the server.
Really?
Yeah, they have Secret Service watching, or because they watch her house. She says,
"Yeah, but does she like detail some people to go in the basement and watch the surf
and stare at it? Just stare at it. Watch the blinking lights.
It'd be a great, great gig.
Maybe she knew that the State Department wasn't all that secure and said, "I know how to do it better." But again, all right. 4chan, Christopher Poole, better known as Moot, is walking away from 4chan. 4chan's an amazing story. He was a teenager when he created this, a high school student in upstate New York 11 years ago, when he created 4chan as a forum. Unfortunately, 4chan became a cesspool because it was wide open, and eventually got a lot of heat for the Fappening and Gamergate. If you don't know what those are, children, go to your local library and look it up.
Look it up on Google.
No. Go to your local library. They're ask sure to have information. Ask a librarian.
Worry about the Fappening.
What is the Fappening? I have an assignment. 20 million unique visitors a month, 40 billion page views in 11 years. One of the most widely visited websites of all time. Moot is now 27. And he says, I've had enough. He's walking away. In 2009, he was number one on Time's poll as the world's most influential person, beating out President Obama, Oprah Winfrey, and the Dalai Lama. But that was only because, that was the fan vote, and that was the power of 4chan, my friends.
Yeah, and bots.
In fact, didn't they do something wild with the vote, so they made the first letters of each name spell? What was it, Chris?
I can't remember.
You obviously spent a lot of time in B/B. Something about cake. God, these guys, they're wild. He wrote, I've come to represent an uncomfortably large single point of failure. His 4chan has given me some amount of notoriety, but certainly it hasn't provided me with wealth. He never was able to sell advertising. In fact, he was, not so long ago, $20,000 in debt and had moved back in with his mother. So I can't blame Moot for dropping out.
So what happens to the site?
That's a good question. I'm sure
he's trying to sell it.
Condé Nast will probably buy it, right?
Yeah, pair it with Reddit. Combine it with Reddit.
Yeah, Condé.
Reddit's
should buy
a good
it.
Fit.
Yeah, yeah, or AOL.
AOL.
Or Meerkat.
Chris knows because obviously Chris, as a 17-year-old, spends a lot of time in /B/. And he says he left it to a team of administrators. They're just going to keep running it.
Yep.
Do you go into do you go to 4chan?
I don't.
Do your parents know you're there? Yeah. Okay.
I don't like to admit.
Isn't that? I mean, he was in high school when he created. Kind of an amazing story. The end of an era. I don't know what Chris Poole will do, but you know what? That's a smart kid, and he's great. I've talked to him. He's a smart kid. He's bright and he's nice. And somebody should hire him and give him a real job.
Oh, he'll get a job.
Maybe Yahoo will buy it. Like they bought Tumblr.
Yeah. Now, there's a good gag. Yeah. It's going to go far once Yahoo gets a hold of it.
That's right.
Best way to hide what's going on 4chan, give it to Yahoo.
All right.
GigaOM, are you sad about what happened? Do you know what happened to GigaOM?
Of course.
I
know what really happened?
Well, I think we do now.
This is kind of suspicious. I don't know.
I think we do now because Matthew Ingram has given a number of interviews. The most recent interview.
It sounds to me, I've read his stuff. It doesn't sound to me like he actually knows.
So
$400,000 for rent?
A month.
Yeah, I can tell you. You see where some problems
I think that's all. I think you just said it right there. Right there. That's the problem.
Bad decisions.
And the thing is, they got $23 million in venture capital, but they were still borrowing money from Silicon Valley Bank because they had, like, rent.
They're plowing through money.
So they ran out of money, and the banks, it wasn't the venture capitalists. Venture capitalists, in this respect, had a little bit more patience than the banks. Banks have no patience. They pushed out the CEO. They brought on an executive from Dow Jones, lent the company more money, borrowed more money, and eventually the creditors said, nah, that's enough.
What was the value of GigaOM? I mean,
virtually nothing from what I can tell.
What Ingram said, and I believe this is true, that it was the problem was never the editorial side. That was a very profitable editorial side. It was their decision to do so they decided to do three things, which was trade shows, which TechCrunch did quite well and made a lot of money.
My understanding is that the research was their number
one. The research arm lost money.
No, no, no. This is just the opposite of what I've read.
All right.
The research arm is the one that had the potential to be profitable. The trade show thing was pretty was doing well, and it was the editorial that was losing all the money.
Of course, Matthew's part of the editorial, so he disagrees. He thinks it's the trade. It's those guys over there.
There's about seven or eight articles out floating around.
Yeah, it is. It's interesting.
They're all
disagreeing. The Recode article that you were looking at, Leo, says that it was the research arm that was dragging them down.
Yeah, and that's from Matthew's interview.
Yeah.
So I think the only reason I bring it up, it doesn't mean it's the end of the line for tech journalism or tech blogs.
No, it's the end.
Is it?
The end is near, Leo.
Oh, crap. So we shouldn't project from this, should we?
It's just an incident. These things happen.
An incident.
And they didn't get enough money. I think that the operation, what's it, Vox, they've got like $200 million
in VC
money.
Yeah, they're doing all right. Yeah. So Giga Ohm, and we love Ohm Malik, who's been on the show many times, and I hope we'll come back. He's in mourning right now, poor guy. I think it was a really devastating blow to him. And some of the best tech journalists. He left a year ago, but it's still his.
Right. But so that's my question. What's the value? Was it in his voice?
I don't think so. I think they had really good people. Stacey Higginbotham, Janko Reckers, Matthew Ingram, many of whom have been on. Kevin Toefel. These are great journalists who've been on our shows many, many times, all out of work like that. And Ingram said we had no inkling.
Yeah,
I love Kevin's take on Chrome. I mean, he did he was always out in front on Chromebook and Chrome OS, and I really enjoyed his pieces. You know, I have to say, I'm curious now the future, because this kept happening right after Apple events. We saw what happened with Macworld, right?
Right.
Literally that afternoon, I'm flying home and I see Jason Snell tweeting that he's out of a job, and I couldn't believe it. And then this happens. We're all sitting there. We're sitting with Renee Ritchie and Serenity Caldwell. We're enjoying a post-show cocktail. And Serenity says, holy cow, Giga Ohm, just done, gone. Well, what? You know, we couldn't believe it right after the event.
Well, and Kevin Toefel had filed his story about the Apple Watch. He was at the event.
Right.
And they didn't tell him, and it was over. That was the last article posted.
So my question is, given these circumstances, who's next?
Well, we have to wait till the next Apple event.
Right. But, I mean, you mentioned TechCrunch. I mean, is this style...
Well, they're owned by AOL, so at this point, they're probably all right, right? I mean, AOL, well, I don't know. Maybe not.
Yeah, it's got to be an independent operation that goes.
Like, I am proud to say I've taken no venture funding or borrowed. Well, we did borrow to build a studio. We've paid that off already, so we have no debtors.
Yeah, you're in good shape. You got no debt.
My rent is $400,000 a month, though.
You're rolling in dough. You're rolling in dough, literally. You can buy $8,000 lenses with just a... Overflow.
That was
money.
A mistake. A mistake.
You're rolling in dough.
I'm going to wrap it up on that fine, upbeat note.
It is upbeat.
It is upbeat. But, you know, we don't, you know, it's, I don't want people to think I'm a one percenter or anything.
You are a one percenter.
No, because then,
You are a total one percenter. I'm glad to know you as such. It's great to look up and see somebody like you, Leo, up there at the top of the hill.
You're a slumlord.
My God.
You own houses all over Berkeley.
No, I don't.
Oh, okay. Anyway. Hey, it's always a lot of fun. John, you're the best. I don't know what I would do if you weren't here. Will you come back April 19th?
I'm coming back to the giant party you're going to throw.
We are going to have
April
so much
19th
fun.
April 19th is going to be holy
10th
moly.
Anniversary
wow.
of Twit.
Yeah, I heard this.
Yeah. So you're going to be – and I Clayton and Dwight, the only reason you're not invited is because it's all the people who were part of the first few episodes of Twit. But please, if you want to nice. Record something, we're looking for people to record messages of love, affection, hatred, whatever. We've actually
approached – So if I showed up on your doorstep on April 19th,
you'd be more than
turn me away?
I'll have a gapagool sandwich waiting for you.
Fly in. Fly in.
More than welcome.
Maybe I will.
Yeah. Hey, we'd love
Maybe
that.
Maybe I will.
You know what? More the merrier. Every former Twit host who wants to come, April 19th, 10th anniversary.
10 years.
What's been the hardest thing that you've faced? What's been the biggest hurdle?
Counting the money.
This guy right here.
Mm-hmm.
Always a challenge. Always a challenge. No. You know, I can think of all the blessings of it, which is, for instance, knowing people like you guys. And getting to talk every week with great people like that really is what makes this fun for me. The hard thing is running a business is a pain in the ass. But I have somebody to do that for me, thank God, now. And I don't have to think about that. You know, firing people is hard. Managing people is hard.
Oh.
Why are you making weird sounds
I'm
for?
I'm just trying to be sympathetic.
Losing weight is hard. Yeah.
Oh.
Anyway, thank you for being here. Mr. Clayton Morris, always a pleasure. Give my love to Natalie.
I will.
Thank you. Miles. And Verna. And the whole game.
My mom, my dad, my extended cousin.
You know, following Clayton on Path has really been a kind of an eye opener, a window into life.
You've gotten to see babies,
yeah,
grow into toddlers. Awesome. Now they're playing with their first lightsabers.
Awesome.
It's really it's a progression. It's really awesome. Crazy how they grow up like that. So always a treat. Thanks
Thank
so
you
much for
so
me.
Much for being here, Clayton. We really appreciate it. Fox and Friends at Clayton Morris. And follow his Twitter account because he really is going to meerkat the hell out of this place.
I am. I'm meerkatting yeah. right now.
Right now. He's meerkatting while we talk.
That's right.
Yeah.
Hi, everyone.
Dwight Silverman, the anti-meerkat.
I'll meerkat.
He's going to do it too. Blog.cron.com/techblog. It's always a pleasure. Please do come up. You'd be more than welcome. I'll never forget sitting. That was one of my highlights of my career, sitting outside the Apple iPad event. On our lounge
That's
chairs,
right?
You came over. We talked about the iPad. That was a lot of fun.
That's right. It was cold out there, too, if I remember.
January,
right.
Bitterly
cold. Cold, yeah.
Cold. Like 65 degrees. It was freezing. Freezing.
Yeah, in San Francisco.
Bad. Yeah. San was damp, too. thank you, John C. Dvorak. NoAgendaShow.com. Have I said that enough?
No, but it's fine that you say
I'll
it
now. I'll say it more.
Okay. Well, yeah.
Become a producer. You know, instead of buying this stupid lens, I should have. Why was I thinking? I could have been like a Golden Knight.
You would have been an 8X. You would have probably gotten, I think, an Earl.
Earl?
Yeah.
Earl. Wow. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, you've been promising to even get a knighthood and you haven't done
it. No,
I'm
not going to.
You're never going to.
You're not getting any money from
it. You don't even listen to the show.
I've given you enough of my blood, sweat, and tears. You're not getting any dough for me, Dvorak. I want to thank everybody for being here, though. Please, it's always a pleasure to have you. We do this show every Sunday, about 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern time. That would be 2200 UTC, I think. Do meerkats whistle? If you want to watch live, if you don't, of course, on-demand audio and video is available of all of our shows, twit.tv, or using our great apps or wherever you get podcasts, you know, all of those places. But please subscribe. That way you get each and every episode. You don't miss a moment. And again, make a note of that. Save the date, April 19th. If you want to be here in studio, we would love to have you. But please, there is a limit. The fire marshal does limit how many people we can have in here. So email tickets@twit.tv. And we will require that you do that before we let you in, because we want to make sure everybody who plans ahead gets in, except for you, Dwight. Fire Marshal does
all
not
right.
count you at all. So
I am not a person.
You're always welcome to the Twit Studios. Thank you, everybody. Appreciate it. Go get your brackets now, because another Twit
is in the can.
Doing the Twit. Goes by so
Twit, baby.
Doing the Twit.
All right.
Doing the Twit, baby.